We have a late notification from National Treasury that they are joining us. Initially, that was not to be the case until late yesterday. We have those three items. The National Treasury, the AG's office, and also expected of us is to receive the oversight report for adoption. I'm not sure if members did receive the copy of the oversight report. We shall also be guided by time so that we don't rush. There are very important issues out of that report that need to be taken forward. This is also a briefing by both National Treasury and the AG's office on a submission or rather table to the report already by the Department of Water and Sanitation. I'm sure some of the National Treasury and AG's office people have been following those submissions by the department. And a number of those issues raised out of that have been widely commented upon in the media space. And it's a very difficult budget, I'm sure you'd agree with me, having to exercise a balancing act on it. Yeah, without waste of time, we shall get... We also took an approach that says we don't have the department to join us per se. However, the onus is on them. Also having to do away with this notion that begins to say, you know, every week the department is here. For all intents and purposes, this is our interaction. In fact, this session was meant to have been to have taken place before as part of our own empowerment as we were to have engaged with the department. Be that as it may, it is still important as we are still heading for our budget for debate. It will also form part of our own work in progress as we go through this whole budget cycle. This budget cycle takes us through a budget review, a midterm budget policy statement, and it goes on and on and on like that. So it's an ongoing process to a point where you would have expected, I would imagine the people from National Treasury and also AG's office will comment on this. You would have been expecting your budget review recommendation report to have been factored into. Those recommendations, whether they have been taken on board, that's a big question mark. Both the AG's office and National Treasury also shall, because they are here, they shall also have to assist us on a tricky matter which we have been dealing with the department. Welcome, Mr. Chauke. The department has had what is referred to as an overdraft. This matter has been upon us for quite some time, to a point where we even asked the department to give us an agreement of that overdraft. Like you, when you go for an overdraft in your own bank, you sign all sorts of agreements. You know, you're going to be subjected to this rate and all of that. You sign at the end. So we looked for that from the department. It never came through, except to have been shown one correspondence between National Treasury and the department, attesting to the fact that they have a commitment. It was a bit of a clumsy one, I must say, but we still insist that we need to get that agreement. Both the AG and National Treasury must assist us in that regard as to who has entered into an overdraft with the department. My lay person's understanding is that your reserve bank, having to be a lay person's, rather a last lender of resort, does not lend money to a department, let alone an overdraft. That's my basic understanding of how the Reserve Bank operates. But National Treasury is here. I'm sure they will give light to that. Okay. We shall then have to start off with the Office of the Auditor General and take us through. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Andries Segeto from the Office of the Auditor General. To my left, I have Mr. Stephen Kelly, who is the Senior Manager responsible for the audit of water and sanitation and more specifically the trading entity. And then to my right, we have Mr. Zipezinke Biela, who is representing the auditors from the main account or the department side. Honourable Chairperson, first and foremost, let me take the opportunity to thank you for providing us with the opportunity to come and engage and brief with you on this important topic. By way of leading the discussion, kindly note that between Mr. Kelly or Stephen and myself, we will be doing the presentation or sharing the actual presentation and the presentation of the slides. Honourable Chairperson, I would now like to take the committee to slide number 2. In the presentation handed out. Honourable Chairperson, our reputation for Mr. Honourable Chairperson, let me take the opportunity to also thank Mam Kaula for that icebreaker for the presentation. We appreciate that. As we were alluding to slide number 2, Chairperson, the reason why I'd like to spend some time on slide 2 before we get started, it's a slide that we've all seen in the past in terms of our constitutional mandate as the Office of the Auditor General. That we try and enhance and strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance through the audit work that we do in an attempt to build public confidence. We'd also like to extend our appreciation to the committee on their understanding of the fact that as the Office of the AG, we just do high-level audits and we report in terms of the work that is done, and it's in no way exhaustive or investigation, so therefore sometimes we may not have certain information that is required or to the extent that maybe would be expected, but it's because of the fact that we just do high level audits, and we do appreciate the fact that the committee understands that. As far as the outcome of the presentation is concerned, we were given a specific brief by the chair of the committee, rather, on slide number 3, in terms of those points that we needed to cover. So high level, we'll give you feedback in terms of the outcomes of the contested audit findings, the status of the financial viability within the portfolio, implementation of the audit findings by the department and the trading entity, as well as a high-level discussion on the risk associated with poor internal controls, and then ultimately also findings on infrastructure projects and the status of compliance with the key legislation. On slide number 5, Honourable Chairperson, I hope the slide is slightly legible, but we've got a slide in front of us, so hopefully that will assist. We've seen this slide before in terms of the briefing we did for the Joint Committee. However, what we've added there is a very last bubble on the right-hand side with regard to now the outcome of the appeals process by the department. By way of maybe just providing a bit of background, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members know that the Office of the AG issued our audit report. The department contested. They were not happy with the content of our findings. We went through a whole process where our findings were reviewed by an independent quality process at the Office of the AG with regard to the content of the actual work and also the conduct of the auditors by our Risk and Ethics Business Unit. Both processes came back and exonerated and substantiated the outcomes which were then issued to the department. Mm-hmm. However, the department, our process also allows for appeals process. So the department appealed the outcome of the initial contestation, which of which we received the letter in January. The office then embarked on a process of appointing an appeals committee to investigate the grounds for the appeal. And in, I think it's on the 20th of April, we received a letter from the acting accounting officer of the department whereby they withdrew the appeal. I did mention it yesterday to the Joint Committee. I'll mention it again here today at this platform that despite the fact that the department has withdrawn the appeal, they did not explicitly state that whether they agree or disagree with our findings. They just said we withdraw the appeal in order for us to salvage the working relationship going forward. So as Office of the AG, even though they have repealed or withdrawn the appeal, we will still continue to finalize our process in terms of validating whether our processes were fine and substantiated. So we will give definitive feedback to the department in this regard, even though they have withdrawn. Because it is important for us that you know, there's a proper finality to the matter and that the appeal is not just withdrawn in the interest of relationship management, but that there's a finality with regard to the issue which was first put on the table, which was the factuality and the correctness of the findings which were issued. So it is important because I think that stems to the heart of the reputation of the AG, and therefore it's important that we get finality on that matter. So we are still continuing in the background. Then on slide 6, further to that, some of the service providers and implementing agents which were used by the department actually took the Office of the AG to court. We were served with court papers in terms of the unhappiness that they raised with regard to the findings and our audit report. It is important to note that such a stakeholder in terms of the court papers which were lodged against the AG is the Lepelle Northern Water. The Lepelle Northern Water Board has served us with court papers in terms of the audit report, as alluded to. And we're just noting that despite the fact that the complaints process was finalized, when they heard that it was in favor of the AG, they still went and submitted the court papers. But we did have an engagement with the CE of Lepelle Northern Water towards the end of April. And we are in the process of setting up a meeting to better understand what the contestation is. From preliminary discussions, it does seem that Lepelle Northern Water feels that they were acting on a ministerial directive, and therefore the outcomes are slightly punitive, referring to Lepelle Northern Water, and they feel the blame should be apportioned at the right level, and that's why they want to engage the AG, but we are in the process of setting up those engagements. Then, Honourable Members, I don't know who's chairing the meeting, maybe...
No,
thanks, Honourable Chauke. Because you know, when you present, you always want to say Honourable Chairperson. Okay, so Honourable Members, let's just say Honourable Members. We'll move over to slide number 8. Okay, so Chairperson, during the opening of the session, alluded to the financial status or the financial health position at the department. So this is our presentation. We've also shared it with the portfolio committee and the joint committee in the beginning of the year. It just depicts the status of the cash flow at the department over the past 4 years. So as you will see, the department has experienced quite a strong decline or depletion in the cash flow reserves from the 2014-15 financial year, when the department had almost 2 billion worth of surplus and cash and cash equivalent, and this has now gone to a negative position, as we are all aware. We also highlighted this fact as, with regards to material uncertainty, which we raised in our audit report in the previous financial year with regard to the overdraft. Some of the bigger attributing or contributing factors to this was a lot of expenditure that was taking place for which there was no budget that was presented or prepared. Amongst others were the War on Leaks program, which has now been included as part of Program 1 in the revised APP, but for the current financial year, an amount of about 542 million has already been spent, and this was not included in the budget. So therefore, before you even start implementing your normal projects and processes that you budgeted for, you're already on the back foot with half a billion rand of expenditure you're incurring for which you have not budgeted for. And this will result in you depicting or disclosing a deficit at the end of the financial year, because you're expensing and there's no revenue or the money did not come in for it in terms of the budget. And then on slide number 9, we continue to give a bit of context, because that was more in 16-17. On slide 9 is the current status in terms of 2017-2018 financial year, where we still highlight the fact that the unauthorized expenditure that's still not been approved by Parliament and it might be required to be refunded in terms of the NRF, it's required by the normal processes, so and the department is likely to incur additional unauthorized expenditure up until the 31st of March. We'll see when they present us with the financial statements for audit on the 31st of May 2018. And as mentioned earlier, the War on Leaks project, which was not budgeted for which 520 million of expenditure has been incurred in this regard. And then there are other concerns with regard to the cash flow status in terms of amounts that are being incurred, but if you look at the forecast, some challenges with regard to the forecasting ability that shows that estimations are that we are going to almost be close to a billion worth of overdraft again in the current financial year. Some of the contributing factors that indicated to these monthly overdraft payment of unavoidable and unanticipated invoices. And we do put that in brackets because that's the feedback we got from the department, that there were unavoidable and unanticipated invoices, the extent of which we are not really sure, because we are still conducting the 2017-18 audit, and we'll probably be in a better position by the time we come reporting time in July or August to give feedback in terms of what it is. But to coin it, unavoidable and unanticipated invoices certainly does raise concerns from an audit point of view, because how did you plan if now all of a sudden things are unavoidable or unanticipated in this regard, especially given the fact that the department or in the portfolio predominantly we deal with multi-year projects which would require proper upfront planning to begin with. And then the payment of one lease we've spoken about, and the absorption of the previous year overdraft balance, and then payment of 2016 accrued invoices. So this is where in the previous financial year we continue to incur expenditure without paying those invoices, and now we are paying them from the current year budget or allocation, and therefore it will result in this dire overdraft position that we are in. Honourable Chairperson, with regard to the financial viability of WTE, I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Stephen Khalid, to quickly take us through the next couple of slides.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think when you look at WTE, again, we're still going to take a similar approach that we did with the main account, where we reflect as at the end of 16-17, and then we also reflect as an interim or the interim financials that were presented to us during the current year, which is still under audit. When you look again, we still reflected it, the financial status over a period of four years, and then you can see that I think with WTE there, the challenge with regards to the cash reserves actually started deteriorating as well from 2014. then they started reducing on the cash flow, on the cash flow that they actually had, while even though the net profit only started to really decline significantly in 2016, coming into 2017. If you look at the bottom part still on your left, that's where we depict whether are they generating enough revenues as in comparison to the expenditures that they are driving the revenues out of. You will see that around 15-16 there was a spike in expenditure which actually exceeded how much revenue they had generated. So that also starts to indicate challenges. So if you look at when we look at liquidity, and liquidity, that's where we look at whether you have enough assets to cover your current liabilities, you'll start to see that the norm is normally around 2:1. So if you have your current assets bucket catering to in a ratio of 2:1 onto your liabilities, then we normally say you have a fairly healthy situation. But if you look at WTE, they are not, they are below that, they are below that healthy status. Similar with the asset ratio. So the asset ratio, that's where we actually take out these current assets that are going to take some time to convert into cash. And now you really say, what exactly cash do you have that could cover your liabilities? That one is even worse, because you'll remember that on their current assets they would have their receivables, the debtors that they would have, which we all know that they are struggling at the time to actually convert into cash. If you look at the lower details there, that is particularly you look at the trade receivables, you'll see that trade receivables has increased in comparison with the prior year by about 22%. And that is not because of new sales. It's mainly because of the struggling received debtors that struggle to where the entity struggles to collect money. And you'll see that the provision, which is what they anticipate not to receive from this receivable, also takes a significant increase, sitting at about 44%. So close to almost 40, almost getting towards 50% of their receivables not being able to recover them. If you look at the payables, they have increased by about 66%. So you start to see that there's an increase in payables, there's decline in conversion of your receivables into cash. So that's why we ended up saying there's actually a significant uncertainty here that these guys could still be able to continue as going concern. If we move over to the next slide, that we reflect on the interim financial statements that were presented to us. So with regards to the overdraft of WTE, the entity entered into not an agreement, but they had National Treasury advanced a cushion to them to say, okay, you have entered incorrectly into an overdraft. These are the measures that we want you guys now to do in reducing the overdraft. Their first hurdle was to reduce it by about 748 million as at end of the year 2018, and as at interim, they had reported that they had actually already met that hurdle, the first hurdle, which was to reduce it by about 748. I think when we had a closer look into it, we realized that yes, that had reduced, but however, what had happened was payables again were increasing. So that that simply means that now they were refraining from paying, holding cash, so that at least it doesn't go out of their bank account. But activity-wise, you would still see that if you have cash here, that's lesser, but you have a whole lot of liabilities that you haven't paid, you're still more or less in a similar situation. And then further to that, in addition to that, we actually noted that there were still invoices that were not yet paid for TCTA, which were about roughly 1.4 billion. So that one we said, okay, this one actually even poses an even more significant risk, because with TCTA, if you withhold payments that goes to TCTA, TCTA would have gone out, borrowed money, and with anticipation of receiving cash from WTE to actually service those loans that they have. If now TCTA does not have cash to actually service those loans, it actually creates even a higher risk that the guys who have provided that those loans to TCTA can at any point in time recall those loans, and we would have to pay up a lump sum out of it from the state, and that is where it will most probably put National Treasury at a significant back foot. So we started to realize those concerns that we had, and I think in addition we still had some of the items that were not budgeted for, that expenditure was still going out. I think some of these things are the things that they had already committed. They were already committed in any case, as at end of 16-17, to pay them. So the Mopane project, there were still amounts that were going out, basically because the project, there's still something that happens on the project, even though there isn't really activity, there's still people who are there who ought to be paid. SEP licenses, they had already committed on the SEP license. They still had now to make a part payment for this current year, which they made, drop a block. They also still did the same, and all these, you would recall that they were not budgeted. What they did this year, you would recall that in 16-17, when we were presenting the items around war on leaks, we had indicated that it was initially paid out of WTE, but we were still in contestations with management at that time, and we had opted to request technical advice on where these items should be, because we felt strongly that it shouldn't be within WTE, but where should it be? So I think we were still looking into that, but I think they also took a proactive approach of taking it out of WTE but placing it into main account, and I think my BE has already articulated the challenges around that. They have included it in the APP, but it was never budgeted for, still in the 17-18 in the main account. In the main account, so chances of it increasing unauthorized expenditures there significantly high. I think when we move over to the next slide here, we just show in the projects that we had picked up in 16-17, which were not budgeted for. We have already discussed and articulated them well. It's one leaks, dropper block, Mopane one, the budget eradication, as well as the acquisition of these SEP licenses. And these SEP licenses, I think, there's two SEP licenses that run within the department. There's within the entity. There's one which was bought for their own, for themselves. That one was a bit fine. The problematic one was the one where they actually acquired it on behalf of or for the use by municipalities and water boards. Because that one is problematic in the sense that the procurement processes that were followed were flawed, as well as the water boards and the municipalities and TCTA who they were procuring this SEP for are not using it. So because they are not using it, each year that passes by, we are counting down fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And even in the current year, they still had not yet made concrete plans on how they get in the water boards and the municipalities on board. But we should also highlight that in our engagements with the entity, we have emphasized the difficulty of just changing systems. And we say, if you are going to expect the people to change systems, you probably need to get in buy-in even way before you start committing on some of these things, because it's not an easy thing just to move from one system to the other system. And I think one other item that we wanted to highlight was around the construction unit within WTE, and I think we briefly touched on it, Honorable Chair, yesterday when we were looking at some of the items that we thought probably the Joint Committee should start interrogating. It's around the capacity that is within the construction unit. So the construction unit was created to deliver on a number of projects, and we can, for the case of the meeting, make a case in an example by saying 10 projects. So when you are not allocating 10 projects at any given point in time to the construction unit, you have resources there that are either idling, or you have resources that are either over allocated on other projects, and thus making that project, because those resources, the overhead, the cost of having those resources gets allocated into a project. So you find you are in this predicament where a higher amount of overhead gets allocated into smaller projects. if those resources are not adequately spread across over this the planned projects that they will be running. So that was what we were trying to highlight here, to say there's excessive overhead costs that this unit incurs, which are now dumped into smaller infrastructure projects that they are conducting, making those projects excessively, the cost of creating those projects excessively high. And I think what we have also noted in the 17-18 is when we looked at the APP, was that, okay, war on risk was included, although it wasn't budgeted, which we have already alluded to. And then there are also other targets which have been reduced, which have been revised downward. And I think when you look at the following slide, that's where we start showing which targets were reduced. So, for example, if I take a case in point, if you look at the number of bulk raw water projects under construction, it was intended to have four of them, and now they are only going to be reporting on one, or they have adjusted it down to one. There were a number of mega regional bulk infrastructure projects, about three of them, that they had planned. Now they have revised that to zero. I think this talks to the financial challenges that they have, because now, because they don't have money, they're trying to see what can we do with the remaining amount of money and avoid going into unauthorized expenditures and so forth. My BE one.
So, Honourable Chair, if I may chip in here, I think the key message on slide number 14, 15, and even on 16, if we page one over there, you'll see they've got a couple of indicators for 18, 19, for which they've put in zero target. And those are quite key indicators in terms of service delivery. They deal with the construction of projects, the completion of projects in terms of the service delivery mandate. I think the key message for us here is, as on the 17-18, we came to Parliament, we asked for X amount of money, promising to deliver X amount of targets. Now the money is there, but now we revised the plan, reducing the target. But the money is still there, because the money is being used to pay other previous accruals. That's correct.
Yeah.
So that's the key message on slide number 14 and 15. And then 16, the APP is, we've reviewed the APP, and the APP has been submitted. And again, I think it's implored upon the oversight to apply proper judgment when reviewing the APP and doing a final approval in terms of your budget processes, taking into account how much money is then being asked against what is being promised to be delivered in terms of the service delivery mandate. Honourable Chairperson, we were also requested to provide high-level feedback in terms of the implementation of audit findings. So we'll jump to slide number 18. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, you would note that or be familiar with the fact that an audit is a very retrospective process. Normally the auditors come in at the end of the financial year, they review your set of accounts or your status of accounts, and they give you a report, but more often than not, it's too late because we come in at the end of the financial year. So you would recall that the Office of the AG, a number of years ago, we implemented this initiative that we called Key Controls Review, where at our key departments and key entities, we would go in on a quarterly basis, do a high-level review of the status of the minimum internal controls, the key controls that we feel should be in place and that you should be covering to ensure an improvement in the audit outcomes. So, for example, we know the year end is 31 March, but we would go in end of September and end of January, we would go to these departments and entities, and then we would say, do you at least have an asset reconciliation that you are doing, an asset register? At least if you have an asset register and you are reconning your assets, we know that there is a control that is being implemented. As to whether that reconciliation has long outstanding items or what the detail does, that's where we do the final audit. But at least at the minimum, there is something that's happening. Now, that process has been substituted with this process that we call the status of records review. It's called the status because we'll go in mid-year as the department is busy executing. We will do a high-level review in terms of the status of the key controls again in that environment, the status of records. Are your accounting records there? And then it's important that we highlight this to the entities, because if in September already you're not doing fixed asset reconciliations by way of example, by the time we come to March, you cannot then expect the auditors to be looking at an asset register that will not tie up because you've not been doing it during the audit, the financial year as you were required to do it by the PFMA. So it also facilitates those discussions where it's an early warning tool, but it'll also facilitate this issue of having pushbacks, because then we would have been warning you throughout the period that this is not in place, you need to focus on this, and it'll also protect us in the terms of, in the sense of having more sensible and robust engagements, because we'd then be able to prove and have less contestations and pushbacks in this regard, where people say, no, but AG, I didn't know, because the audit process only comes in the end, and you do an audit, and then you give me feedback in the end. So having given you that background, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, on page 18, on slide 18, is the actual feedback of the status of records review that we did at the department and the WTE. And unfortunately, the feedback, even though you no longer see the smiley faces, red still means a problem. Red, green is good, yellow means intervention is, there's a concern that's required, but for now it's not worrying us. And unfortunately, our review of the environment, you can just predominantly read in the key areas that are required and in the disciplines that are required, the financial management disciplines, the discipline of financial health like we've discussed, the procurement and the compliance management. Performance management is still worrisome, but at least it's gone through the necessary approval processes. So even though we raise certain concerns, for example, on the APP, but it has gone through the necessary approval processes, we've just raised the concerns with regard to the performance, which then has an impact on the financial management and the financial health. So the detail of the deliberations are from slide number 19 all the way through to slide number 22. I'm just going to deal with a number of them. I'm not going to go in a lot of detail because a lot of the information has also been covered elsewhere. The biggest concern for us under financial management, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is the fact that due to the contestations, the efforts and the attention of the department was put on dealing with the appeals and the contestations that, to the extent that we did not go and implement remedial action plans to address the findings. So therefore, in the absence of timely and proper action plans, we run the risk that we will have similar audit outcomes again in the financial year. So as of January 2018, when we were engaging the audit committee all the way up to February 2018, the department had not prepared adequate and proper full complete action plans to address the prior year shortcomings which were reported to the department. I think that's the key message from the financial management point of view. From a TCTA point of view or the WTE point of view, although certain adjustments had been made in the financial models, certain shortcomings were still identified with regard to adjustments which are affected but not reviewed by management. So there's no real sense of whether assurance has been provided on those adjustments. So yes, you've adjusted, but in the absence of reviews by senior management, we don't know whether those adjustments are accurate, reliable, and complete, and whether it will result in the desired outcome of improving the audit outcomes. And then also the assets under construction, which are also a qualification area in the previous financial year, are still remaining a concern as we still continue to capitalize those assets without the proper supporting evidence. And obviously this will pose a problem when the auditors come around. We will give us a listing of all these assets under construction, but when we need to validate them against supporting evidence, the evidence will not be there, and that might pose a challenge with regard to the audit thereof. And then still on the financial management, we've spoken about the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It has a financial impact because in terms of your management, you keep on incurring the payments without having proper plans to deal and ensure that you will bring these projects to finality and the SAP licenses as mentioned. I'd like to jump to slide number 22, please, with your permission and indulgence, Chairperson. On slide number 22, there are two key messages here which we would like to leave the committee with. The first one is the compliance management. Now, as the Office of the AG, we've also taken a bit of a hard stance in terms of this because we get challenged when we come and we present to oversight. Year on year, we come and we give the same report, same audit outcome, same findings, and then we get challenged in terms of what is being done in the environment to move the status quo. And unfortunately, in terms of the PFMA, it all starts with the accounting officer, where the accounting officer must hold officials accountable. Now, in the absence thereof, there's little that you can do apart from reporting and elevating and escalating to oversight structures such as yourself. And it's only now recently, with the intervention of oversight committees such as yourself and SCOPA, where the department has really now all of a sudden started acting and issuing people with written warnings. But unfortunately, the interventions currently that are being implemented are not sufficient and proper, because you find yourself in a situation where we give final written warnings to everybody in the system from A to Z, despite the gravitas or the severity of the transgression. There's no proper analysis of what is the transgression. So, and in order for you to understand the seriousness of the transgression, it means that you must conduct an investigation first, do a proper assessment and understanding of what went wrong. That will assist you with two things. You will know the proper course of action in terms of going forward, but you will also help you identify the root cause in terms of what has gone wrong so that you can go and fix it and implement an improvement or update your internal controls or remedial action in that regard. So in the absence of doing a proper assessment or understanding, you will not go and implement a proper internal control to fix what went wrong to begin with, and then people will also not be held accountable. Therefore, it will perpetuate the behavior of wrongdoing in terms of these processes and unfortunately result in unfavorable audit outcomes and potentially challenges with regard to service delivery implementation. The last one is with regard to the procurement and contract management. I've spoken partly to it with regard to understanding what has gone wrong so that you can know what to fix. But in also knowing what to fix, there must be a vigilant process where people stay close to new and latest developments in the legislative sphere in terms of if guidance is issued by National Treasury. We need to go back and analyze and understand the guidance and the updated legislation to see how it impacts on our environment and whether we need to update our policies. Because if people transact, they start with a policy, they implement in line with the policy, and if the policy is outdated or not in line with the legislation, you still run the risk that people will be in non-compliance in this regard. And one big issue that we raised with regard to non-compliance that results in irregular expenditure was around the area of implementing agents. I think this has been also discussed at length at this platform. However, it is still a concern for us because the ministerial directives which were issued in the past, people would say, I've got a ministerial directive, I'm going to implement, but not taking into account that despite the fact that you've been issued with a ministerial directive, you are still required to follow the applicable legislation. And we noted a lot of irregular expenditure with regard to supply chain management principles which were not being adhered to with regard to ministerial directives. It is important and imperative for the department to go back and determine the full extent of where we could have incurred non-compliance with supply chain management principles that could result in irregular expenditure, because remember, like I mentioned in the beginning, we only work on a sample basis, and they must make sure that they've disclosed all the complete and irregular expenditure. It's going to be important, that last point, Honorable Chairperson, during one of our later slides as well, we'll emphasize or we'll note to you why we're emphasizing it to this extent later on. On slide number 24, Honorable Chairperson, we were asked a question that deals with the risks associated with poor internal controls. We thought it well just to give a bit of background to say, as we've mentioned earlier, the responsibility of internal controls is that of the accounting officer and whatever or whomever official he wishes to delegate through in terms of the delegation of authority framework. Now, if we do not have proper internal controls or we have poor internal controls, there's always a possibility that we'll have material misstatements in our financial statements. So therefore, the processes and the procedures which are supposed to be driving the service delivery, the financial management and the reporting, if they are deficient, it will result in us not being able to completely, fully and reliably account to our relevant stakeholders such as oversight, such as yourself, in terms of how we have fared to account for the money that's been allocated to us for budget implementation. And then as soon as you have that, you'll have material misstatements in your performance report. So you won't be able to account accurately and fairly in terms of your performance of your service delivery aspect, and then obviously incur non-compliance with legislation. And then there might be the environment that has got poor internal controls, Honorable Chairperson, is always more susceptible and prone to have fraud and error in that prevalent in that environment. And ultimately, we conclude the slide by saying the impact is always on service delivery. It's ultimately service delivery that will be negatively impacted by poor internal controls. Now, I'm going to be a little bit controversial and naughty by saying if you consider that statement, that last statement on slide number 24, and you take into account the way we've structured our presentation by telling you the financial implications, you understand the overdraft, and then we dealt with the APP. So you could see it tangibly, the impact of poor internal controls. Because we had poor internal controls in the financial management space and incurred irregular expenditure and overdraft, we're now reducing our target, and therefore we are able to deliver less with the same amount of money that has been allocated to us. The reason why that is important, Honorable Chairperson, is if you look at that little wagon wheel that we've got on the left-hand side, is the theme that we shared with the Portfolio Committee during the BRRR session. It was also included in our briefing for the Joint Committee, which we had in March, where we said in order to promote an environment where there's proper accountability, you need to have a couple of things in place. A clearly defined and understandable definition of the target or the objective. What is it that you're trying to achieve? Once everybody is aligned with what it is that you're trying to achieve and how we are going to get there, then we go and implement the mechanics and the cogs and wheels that will drive us there. These are the implementation of basic internal controls, the implementation of the basics, the processes, the understanding of what is expected in terms of the machinery that must drive the service delivery implementation. And then we go and implement proper monitoring, because monitoring is important. We must do it for two reasons. It must be able to tell us whether we're still on track, or whether if we are not on track, we must detect it early in order for us to make the proper adjustments and the necessary corrections as and when we are going about implementation. So without proper monitoring, you run the risk of coming at the end of the term, and now when you need to account, you realize I've not achieved what I planned or set myself out to achieve because I did not have proper monitoring throughout. And then obviously, where things go wrong, there needs to be consequences. And then if you can see in line with the feedback we've given you in terms of this portfolio, because the internal controls are not working, no monitoring was there, lack of consequences, we all know what the outcomes are in terms of this portfolio. We've received unfavorable outcomes, and now we can tangibly see it in terms of the impact that we have, that the numbers of service delivery are being reduced, and therefore we're hampering impact that this portfolio is supposed to be having if one considers that wagon wheel. Honorable Chairperson, on slide number 26, we are moving towards finality, Honorable Chairperson, I promise. On slide 26, it is important to understand that, yes, the auditing deals with the vouchering and the invoices and the supporting evidence and the documentation, but we do also spend a great deal and amount of time in terms of looking at the infrastructure projects, which are quite key and significant and material in this portfolio. We were requested to give additional feedback. Unfortunately, at this point in time, Honorable Chairperson of the members, we don't have feedback because we're so busy with the 17-18 audit. Our teams are going out to the site visits now. However, it is important to note that last year, when we reported our findings on the infrastructure project, we did not have significant or material issues to report with regard to the quality of what was on the ground. Our issue was always saying, we can see it's on the ground, however, you've paid 20 rand for it, potentially you could have paid 10 rand, and there is potential overpayment in terms of duplicate invoices and value for money not received. And we also highlight some of the additional projects that we'll engage on in the current financial year. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the compliance monitoring, I think on slide 28, the responsibility of the accounting officer we've dealt with, and the auditor's responsibilities, we just give a high-level understanding to the committee in terms of the focus areas where we look at compliance and the criteria that we use, the pieces of legislation. There are a number of legislation pieces which are applicable to any portfolio or department or entity out there. However, we just look at high level those which have a financial bearing or which are important in the auditing space. What's important on this slide, Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to jump to slide number 30. On slide number 30, our current interim audit has revealed that we do have certain challenges with regard to the audit of the transfers and the conditional grant. Whereby we must comply with the DORA and the PFMA. And if we look at the transfer of those grants, there are a number of interventions or requirements which were not met with. Like, for example, the transfer payment is made without the authorized delegated official having signed on it. It's a lack of internal control, because are you releasing the correct amount? Are you releasing to the correct entity? So there's a reason why it's required to be signed off at a properly delegated level in this regard. Quarterly evaluation reports which are not submitted to National Treasury. I see Treasury also has alludes to reporting requirements in terms of representation. So some of the quarterly reports were not done in line with the requirements of Treasury. And then some monthly statements which were not submitted in order to assess the implementation of those grants, and the business plans not signed. I mean, if you submit a business plan and it's not signed, it therefore means you're going to release payment, but you don't know what it's going to go for, because the business plan is not reviewed and signed. So there must be common understanding in terms of, if I release money, for it must be achieving X, Y, and Z, and that X, Y, and Z is clearly articulated in the business plan. So if I haven't signed it off, what am I paying against in terms of the money that's being released? Honorable Chair, I'm going to hand over to Stephen now to quickly deal with the food label on slide number 31 and 32.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think when we look at fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we depict it over the period of about 8 years, so you can start seeing that for water and sanitation, in particular, our increase skyrocketed. So they have always been heading this fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but in particular, it started increasing around 14-15, and then in 15-16 it went significantly high. And I think around 15-16 it is because of the focus that we actually gave on projects. And that is where we started unpicking some of the projects that were running, and we're saying, and this is where my BE has already alluded to, we have to see what it is that is on the ground, which you have already constructed at the worth of value that you have already spent in your financials. And then we go and say, we can see that what you have constructed through the use of our experts, that it is of good value. However, this portion that you have just completed now, and when we make it in comparison with how much you have spent to bring this thing here where it is, you have actually excessively spent. And we started to look into specific things to say, where could this overspend have happened? I think we have shared when we were doing our BRRR that there were other areas where you would find that a service provider charges double higher than the authorized rates that DPW allows for us to charge. We have demonstrated in some cases that there were duplicate payments that we could pick and so forth. And all those things that we say, yes, they have been spent, however, some of them have not added any additional value to what is exactly on the floor. So I think those are the disparities between the good quality that's on the floor and the excessive price that we have incurred. I think in addition to that, you would still recall that, Honorable Chen, Honorable Members, that we still qualified fruitless and wasteful expenditures in both water trading as well as in the department. And that qualification was to say, we are not comfortable that you have identified all fruitless and wasteful expenditures that should be disclosed in this financial statement. So those figures that we have provided there, we have actually put a qualification on it to say they may not be complete. Management had to interrogate their entire records, revisit the entire projects to actually accumulate the entire the exact figure of how much that. But that figure should be slightly higher than that. We know when it comes to to water trading entity as well, that there were additional fruitless and wasteful expenditures which we had identified, which management at the time had refused to disclose. And already from there, whatever they have disclosed, we know that it's not complete and needed to still be factored in. And I think around here, that is where we are emphasizing the SEP one, but we've already discussed it, and I'm going to move on that one. So let's move on to the next one, which is irregular expenditure. I think similarly with irregular expenditure, you'll start to see that, excuse me, for the department, it starts to significantly hike around 14-15 into 15-16 and 16-17. And again in 16-17, we also had a qualification on the completeness of that irregular expenditure. So that is what we are saying. We are saying is whatever you have disclosed, we don't have the comfort that that is the total amount that should be disclosed. So there is more that you probably still need to disclose in addition to whatever you have already disclosed in that area. That applies to both the department as well as on WTE. On WTE, we know that they had incurred there were bid adjudication committees that set, and they did not correct. However, decisions were still concluded, and when that happens, that becomes irregular expenditure. Now, what management has to do, because we had selected a few samples, management would have to open up all their DBEC approvals and identify all those meetings where they sat and they did not correct, where they make decisions, because all those decisions become irregular expenditure. So we had a challenge around that. We had a challenge around SEP. We had a challenge around the appointment of professional persons, and I think the appointment of professional persons was where they appointed a senior engineer on the project who they call an APP, an approved professional person who oversees that project and is the one who approves each stage of that project. When they appointed that particular person, the person was initially within the entity, but he was already close to retirement. And when they submitted that name, the DG said, no, you can't appoint this person because he's going to leave the project anyway halfway without it being completed because he's going on retirement. Go find another APP within the department who can be there for the duration of the project. So what the senior members did was they said, well, the guy went out to be a service provider and came in as a service provider now to still do the similar APP work, and there were no proper procurement processes that had went to go secure his services on the other side. We still had challenges around quotations. I think the other one that we found was around the proper block, which we mentioned as well yesterday, that here the proper block, CDBN just went to one supplier and sourced one supplier and placed there. So I think what we are saying in conclusion, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is when you look at the figures that are disclosed around fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure, even though they are significantly high, we have put in a qualification on both those amounts to say there is more that management still needs to go investigate and further disclose in them.
Thank you, Stephen. And then, Honorable Chair, in conclusion, on slide number 32, it's also important to note that you've got a graph that shows the 4 billion, which is the combined irregular expenditure which we've added for both the department and the entity, the known one that they've disclosed. So if you look at that 2.4 billion in the table that's below, that 2.4 billion has actually not been disclosed by the department and it is known. So basically when we're doing our audit, we reported this to the department and then they felt that it's not going to be disclosed, getting a qualification anyway. So if you want to get context of what we know, it's irregular expenditure, it's not just the 4 billion that's in the graph, it's actually the 4 billion plus the 2.5 billion. So when we talk irregular expenditure in this portfolio, it's actually to the amount of 6.5 billion and not just the 4 billion that's disclosed. And that is just the known part that excludes the part that must still be investigated and completed. Then on slide number 33, Chair, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the remaining slides. I think we'll be done with the gist of the presentation. But on slide 33, it's important to note that a lot of instances, and it's not just in the department, it's a general slide, Chairperson, Honourable Members. When we go out and we do the procurement testing audit, we get challenged in terms of deviations. So there's a term that says I deviated, it's allowed in terms of the legislation. However, even though the legislation allows for deviation, there are clear requirements in terms and guidance in terms of what is needed to be implemented when you deviate. And then you also need to understand, when you say something is an emergency, what is an emergency and how do you go about in terms of an emergency? And there are clear pieces of guidance in the legislation, in the Constitution, and in the Disaster Management Act in terms of what constitutes an emergency if you're going to use that as your basis for deviation. And in more often than not, when we evaluate the motivations that are given by our auditees out there, it does not meet the minimum requirements of these pieces of legislation, and therefore we find it hard to accept those as justifiable and reasonable motivation for the deviation, and then it's reported as irregular expenditure. If I can simplify this, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, you know, we do appreciate that if you have an accident, there is a period that you will lie in ICU. But once you are out of ICU for the 3 or 4 weeks that you were there, the recovery and the rehabilitation and the physiotherapy, that's no longer emergency. That's now just an anomaly that something has happened. You're now required to, you know, adjust your processes, but you can still plan for the physio, you can still plan for the rehabilitation process going forward. So in no way are we saying or discounting the fact that, yes, something has gone wrong or something required intervention. Yes, something required intervention, but to what extent then the further processes were engaged in are deemed not to be or were found not to be in compliance with the guidance as issued by those pieces of legislation. Then, Honourable Chairperson, one topical issue in terms of our portfolio and the work done by the oversight committees is the extent to which ministerial directors have impacted irregular expenditure in the water and sanitation in the water board's sphere. So the table set forth to depict the number of directives which were issued to the different water boards over the past 3 or 4 financial years, and then you also see the extent of the irregular expenditure which were recorded reported in those specific water boards. For example, rainwater is green. Green means there's no issues, although there were ministerial directives issued. It's important to note that, for example, rainwater, when they were issued with a directive in the previous financial year, they actually refused to implement, citing that they want to understand where the budget is going to come from and the scope of the work, and then they actually didn't go and implement the ministerial directive issue. Waste Red are the entities where the ministerial directive was issued, it was accepted, it was implemented. However, we found irregularities around the awards of the detailed procurement processes on those contracts, especially in the area of Mhlatuzi and Lepelle, where, as far as Amatola and Citibank are concerned, also ministerial directives issued, also implemented. However, when we were auditing the supply chain management processes of the appointment at those implementing agents, we were not provided with the supply chain management documentation, so therefore we could not evaluate, and that's why they are highlighted in yellow. And then certain other internal control deficiencies which were noted. So the department has issued the implementing agent with the director that they go and implement on my behalf. Some of the other projects that were noteworthy there to be reported are the desalination plant. I think this one is in Mhlatuzi in Richards Bay. And then some of the CETA contract, the BCX, but this one has been coming for a number of years now and it's adequately disclosed by the department in the annual report. Chairperson, I think I'm going to jump quickly over to slide number 37. All the other recommendations, I think I know we've covered them adequately during some of the deliberations we've been having. We do all appreciate the request, the need for proper consequence management, for management to implement proper internal controls. I think we've dealt with that. With regard to our recommendations to oversight, this is the Office of the AG recommendation, and we deal with a lot of the oversight structures such as SCOPA and yourself and SCOA. A couple of recommendations that we feel go a long way in assisting the relationship that we have. One thing that the committee is doing quite well, you'll see we've also given you green there, Chairperson, to say you do regularly invite the Office of the AG to come and engage with you. You do regular oversight visits, and that assists a lot in understanding the portfolio that you are dealing with and what's on the ground. We would, however, also still like to stress generally as a rule of thumb that we should not be tolerating hearings or briefings from auditees who come to Parliament unprepared. A lot of people come with a big stack of information, they dump it on the page and they expect you to go through it. So therefore, we really advocate for that. We do appreciate the fact that consequence management is now being re-emphasized, and then accountability is also being promoted, especially with regard to the responsibilities of the accounting officer as required by Section 38 of the PFMA. Honourable Chairperson, the last slide that I'm dealing with is this slide. We were challenged with regard to the impact of accountability, the correlation thereof with corruption and the impact of service delivery. Now there's a academia in the world, somewhere in the world of academics, who did a study and found that corruption is actually driven by three main areas. There's monopoly, discretion, and accountability. That's on slide 38. So the study revealed that corruption thrives in an environment where accountability is low, or discretion is high, or monopoly is high. Now, if one unpacks each one of those three criteria, unfortunately in government we've got a monopoly. Government has got spending power. As a government, we have to go and buy certain things to affect service delivery. So we do have monopoly, we've got buying power. That's an area which we cannot influence or have it any other way. The discretion, accounting officers, given the responsibility in terms of the legislation, he must act in order for them to go and affect service delivery. So therefore, they've got the power and the discretion to act. However, where accountability is low, which is one area that we have power over, then it creates an environment where corruption festers or it's fertile in, ground for corruption to thrive. And likewise, the inverse was found to be true, where there's high levels of accountability. We find the inverse being true, that corruption levels are quite low. And the last one is the impact of corruption. When corruption is on the rise, unfortunately, it's always service delivery that suffers, as also alluded to earlier with the slide that had the little wagon wheel. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, we know it's been quite a long session. We do thank you for your attention and the opportunity to have presented. We'll take questions, inputs, and comments at this point in time. Thanks, Chair.
I'm tempted that we take National Treasury once, so that we have one a composite engagement.
Before they go, I want to you see this UIFW, you know, this is an abbreviation.
I apologize for that. The world of auditing is full of conventions and auditing jargon. It's unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Oh. Just abbreviation for those.
The world of parliament does not give me
a couple. So we are not leaving. Huh?
Not yet.
Are we fine with having to allow National Treasury so that we have one comprehensive set of discussions? Maybe once, whilst you are setting yourself up, just as a matter of interest, perhaps you might wish to respond to this as you move to wherever. But what type of accounting system is the department using?
The general one for all government departments.
Same. SEP.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Ulrike Britten. I am the Chief Director who is responsible for, amongst others, the Department of Water and Sanitation, budget and policy matters in the National Treasury. We were asked a series of questions to explain to this committee today, which is quite difficult to do in a time when we're sitting between the end of the financial year and our ability to access systems and back versus where the department is preparing for the annual financial statements and the statutory requirements around all of that. So it's quite difficult to, I mean, I'm going to show you a series of numbers and a series of tables today that are symptoms of or highlights problems that we think fit within the budget. We will only get clarity on what that actually is and what it means once we see the pre-audited financial statements that the PFMA requires departments to finalize by the end of this month. So just to highlight the reporting requirements and where we are in all of this is we are sitting between this period in the PFMA where departments have submitted financials to us, or not financials, but the department reports on the expenditure and revenue as per Section 40 of the PFMA, and the other provisions in Section 40 where they prepare comprehensive financial statements by within 2 months of the end of the financial year. So what happens during this period is the department is trying to close their books and they're trying to prepare their financial statements. So numbers change all the time. You have these suspense accounts where departments are busy journalizing entries to recognize the expenditure and revenue and all of that. So what I'm going to present to you for the department, we are quite certain, is close to what, from an expenditure point of view, what they will be submitting to the Auditor General for audit. But there's a whole bunch, but that only relates to expenditure matters. For the water trading entity, it's slightly different because we don't have access to SEP, whereas we have access to BAS. So all government departments, national and provincial departments, are on the basic accounting system, we call it BAS. And we have access to real-time information about how they're processing things on BAS, which we don't necessarily have for the water trading entity. So the numbers I'm going to show for the water trading entity is what we require the water trading entity to report to us 15 days after the end of the month in terms of Section 40 of the PSMA. So for the department, the expenditure outcome for the department for this financial year is the total expenditure on the vote was 96.8% of the adjusted appropriation amount. This is largely due to what we see is what we call significant underspending on the indirect component of the regional bulk infrastructure grant. So in the top half of the table, what you're really seeing is overspending in administration. This is largely due to water leaks. Now, seeing an overspending in administration tells you something quite important about the War on Leaks program. The administration program across all government departments are standardized. This is really the program that runs the department, where you have IT and HR and facilities and all of those things. And by putting a line function like this into administration kind of signals to us that there's no home for War on Leaks, a natural home for War on Leaks within the department's budget. And this is largely due to War on Leaks being hidden within the water trading entity, which is not their mandate. The War on Leaks is a water services program. The water trading entity is a water resource entity. They deal with water resources. And by seeing this spending within administration basically tells us that there's no natural home for this within the budget, and that's why they never budget for it. What's quite interesting about what's happening in this department is, I mean, I show you the adjustments. So in the 2017 adjusted estimates, adjusted appropriation, we added, in terms of Section 30 of the PFMA, 500 million rand into the department's budget. This was for two specific projects. This was 200 million rand went into the bucket in the regional bulk infrastructure program for the Butterworth project, and 300 million rand was included in the transfer to the water trading entity for the Hooded Road project. Now, if you look at the line that says buildings and other fixed structures, what you're really seeing there is so the addition of the 200 million rand that we had put into the budget for Butterworth, but what we also have in there is a shift in the department's budget. So the department had reprioritized money out of compensation of employees and goods and services that had gone into the indirect component of the WSIG mostly for the bucket eradication program. So that was just over 150 million rand. Despite these additions into that program, we see or that line item in the budget, there's only been an 85% spend on the program. This is largely due to no spending on the Butterworth project. So this was an emergency project that received money as an unforeseen and unavoidable event in the budget, and the department hasn't spent any of the money related to that. What's also quite interesting within this budget, and I want you to pay careful attention to this, is we show basically in the lines that says departmental agencies and accounts, these are transfers that the department would make to Schedule 3A public entities and the water trading entity. And so in this line, the department basically says they've transferred all the money to the water trading entity. When I get to the water trading cash numbers, you'll see some slight discrepancies and all of that. And lastly, what is quite concerning to us is because these are this impact on the division of revenue is the line that says provincial and local government. These are the direct grants that we make to municipalities on the regional bulk infrastructure grant and the water services infrastructure grant. So basically what this is that the department has withheld funds or they haven't made those last payments to municipalities. It's not really a problem if there has been some kind of DORA issues or division of revenue issues and compliance issues or perpetual underspending within those municipalities. But the Division of Revenue does set out rules on how you stop and you withhold money from municipalities for conditional grants. So overall what this shows is that there has been an underspending in the department of about 500 million rand. Despite that underspending, the overspending that we're seeing in Program 1 still constitutes unauthorized expenditure because the definition in the PFMA that it is overspending on the vote or the main division of the vote. So what does this mean for going forward in the department's budget? Honorable members, I'd like you to pay attention to the line that shows the change in the budget estimate. So as you know, in February, the minister, when the Minister of Finance tabled the budget, we did budget cuts of about 85 billion rand over the NPF. That was the largest budget cuts we have done since we've been cutting budgets. The Department of Water and Sanitation did not escape this. Now, we have received lots of criticism around all of this, but so where we have cut the budget here, and as the Auditor General's presentation has alluded to some of this in the APPs, was the mostly the Accelerated Community Infrastructure Program, so ASIP. That is why you see zero in the APP, you see zero ASIP projects, and we have cut some transfers to water boards, specifically Umgeni and Sidibe, and there were small cuts in Amatola, and then there were small cuts on the budget on the Water Services Infrastructure Grant. We did not cut any transfers to the water trading entity, and we did not get any of the indirect grants. So where the pressure is in this department's budget is on the regional bulk infrastructure grant. There wasn't any debt on that. The reason why there is such a big cut on ASIP is because we believe that ASIP is a duplication of functions. This is what I call the Department of Water and Sanitation Flash Fund. So this is where they go and they do interventions, or they use it for where they duplicate functions of other spheres of government or projects, and this is where they intervene without any consistent practice related to this. And I'll get to this later in the presentation, because we were also asked to respond to the recommendations that were made in terms of the budget review and recommendations report. So what does this budget really show us? The fastest growing item in this budget is the transfer to the water trading entity that grows at an average annual rate of 10.3%. So basically what we're doing is we're adding, by the end of the current NTF, we'd have an additional 700 million rand in the budget of the water trading entity. The shifts that we are seeing, so the low growth that we see in this department's budget is really on the indirect grants. Now there are inconsistencies These indirect grants are quite controversial, and the Financial and Fiscal Commission and SALGA is really concerned about how national government intervenes in functions of other spheres outside of Section 139 and Section 100 of the Constitution. And this is really what they believe indirect grants do, is when national government intervenes into a municipality outside of provisions that are set up in the Constitution, basically duplicating their functions. This poses a lot of risks to water infrastructure, because on the one hand, you have the national department building infrastructure and not transferring those assets for maintenance to municipalities, where municipalities do receive the funds to maintain those assets. So in the cases where they sell the water services, they generate the revenue, and for low-income households, they get compensated in the local government equitable share for them. So one of the things that is quite good about what's happening in the department and the change that we're seeing, or the long-term trajectory around the regional bulk infrastructure grant and the water services infrastructure grant, is we're seeing the shift of funds out of the indirect grant into the direct grant. one of the things that we were asked, and it's really difficult to say because the appropriations are a statutory requirement. I mean, it's an act of parliament that appropriates this money. Where departments do have priorities, they have to ensure that the priorities are put in the budget. And we do see that within the APP. We see a reduction in targets and all of that in line with the pressures that the department faces. So over the medium term, this budget does grow below inflation, but where the big programs and the important stuff is happening, they're growing in line or in excess of inflation. So in relation to the water trading entity, the left half of the table is really what's happening in the water trading entity, and this is from a cash point of view. I prefer to show the cash numbers, because this is actually the money coming in and the money going out of the water trading entity. So there are some issues around some of the payables within the water trading entity and accruals within the water trading entity, and I'll speak to all of that. But really, one of the big problems that we have seen with the water trading entity, and the last time that I was with FS committee, is I was showing this consistent increasingly increased expenditure on goods and services within the water trading entities. So part of it is doing water services projects, and spending exceeding the goods and services budget and what they tell us they would be spending on these things. So the left half of the table shows really what's happening from a cash point of view within the water trading entity, and the right half of the table is really the projections going forward. So what's really interesting with the water trading entities is that from a cash point of view, they're collecting more from municipalities and water boards than they had anticipated. So the sale of goods and services other than capital assets is really the money that's coming in from the sale of raw water or the sale of water to water boards and municipalities, and that is a lot higher than what they anticipated. So one of the things that I'm a little worried about, and these numbers really come out of what the water trading entity tells us on a monthly basis, what's happening within them, and we have no way of verifying all of this, is that the transfers that the water trading entity receives is that they're saying it's lower than what the department says they have transferred to the water trading entity. And we are hoping that by the 31st of March, when we get both the financials of both the water trading entity and the department, be able to kind of reconcile what's really happening in all of this. So from a cash point of view, the department is really, it's really on the operating expenses. It's where we see they're spending more than what they have budgeted for. They're spending more on compensation of employees, they're spending more on goods and services than what they had anticipated. What we are also seeing is that, and this is a consistent issue within the water trading entities, they underspend on their capital budgets. So the line that says acquisition of plant, property, and equipment is really their capital budget and the capital project, and we see some underspending on that. And in the cash flow from financing activities, the borrowing activities that we're seeing in that line is really what they pay the TCTA. So we're seeing, and the colleagues from the Auditor General's office has explained what's happening within payables. So this is really, and one of the big issues is the TCTA and the payments they make to the TCTA. Part of the problem isn't necessarily the water trading entity's problem. I think there's weak communication between the water trading entity and the TCTA in agreeing upfront on what those payments and what the debt profile of the TCTA is and what those commitments are. So when we look at the financials of the TCTA says that the water trading entity is going to give them a lot more than what the water trading entity is actually budgeted for. And it kind of shows that there's no agreement between the two of them on what is really required around all of this. Notwithstanding all of that, we do see that the water trading entity is behind in payments to the WTE. This is one of the reasons why they were able to meet their commitments in reducing the overdraft, was delaying some of the payments to the water trading entity. Despite all of that, we do see the significant improvement in the cash position of the water trading entity for this year. But this is all preliminary. We have no way of verifying it. This is what they are telling us. Once the audit takes place, then we are able to say with greater certainty of what's really happening within the water trading entity. Over the medium term, one of the fastest growing items are these commitments that the water trading entity has to make to the TCTA. What we are worried about is how they budget for goods and services, because we have seen the significant growth. So the last time I was here, I think it was like an average annual growth rate of 12% in goods and services in the water trading entity, but over the medium term they're saying that this will be declining. Part of why this may be declining is because they have moved some of the water services projects that they shouldn't have a mandate doing out of the budget in any case. But what we are worried about with this decline is what's happening to maintenance and the maintenance budgets. And as this committee knows, a lack of maintaining something in 1 year, you only see the consequences of that in 5 or 10 years' time. So while we do see significant improvements for this year in the water trading entity's cash position, we are still worried about some of those other kind of non-cash items that may undermine the commitments that the water trading entity has made in improving its cash. So what does this mean from for the overdraft? So as Honourable members, as you know, in 2017, let's go back to 2015-16, so in 2016-17 we've seen a significant and rapid deterioration of the cash balances and the bank balances of the water trading entity, and in December 2016 we warned the department that if they're not able to pull back on this, one of the things that we will consider is stopping all payments that are processed through the primary bank account, which is the famous general account that they have with us. What has happened was then we stopped, because this continued to deteriorate, that in March we stopped all the processing of all payments, and we had said to the department, we will only stop processing these payments if you make a commitment to reduce the overdraft. So you tell us what you can afford and what you can commit to, and then we will open up the accounts again. And on the 13th of April in 2017, the department confirmed that they were able to reduce the overdraft by 200 million in the first quarter of 2017-18, and then by 748 million in 2017-18 to 1.9 billion. They had also committed to us that the balance of that overdraft they would reduce in 2018-19. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. One of the other things that the department had committed was that they will no longer fund or pay for any water services projects. So this would be water leaks, drop of block, some of those interventions that are on water services projects will no longer be paid for out of the water trading entity. So what has happened is at the end of the financial year is we can see that the department has reduced the overdraft in excess of 748 million rand. So it's just slightly over 748 million rand. But what we can still see in their budget is that they continue to fund water services projects, specifically water leaks. So the capital, what we see in the reports that they have sent to us is the department spending 100 million rand in 17-18, quite late in 17-18, so this was towards the end of the third quarter. Now, we became aware of this, and we had written to the department and said, if you continue doing this, what we will do is we will stop all payments, processing of all payments, in the way that we did in April or earlier in that year. And this is a worry to us, is that so even though there's this commitment, and you can see it in the department's budget with the overspending in Program 1, is that war and leaks has partially shifted out of the water trading entity, and rightly so, but it does seem like there's still lots of pressure to do this. I mean, and this is probably one of the reasons why the water trading entity is in the trouble that it is in. I mean, a program or a project like war and leaks wasn't budgeted for, which means that the department or the trading entity would have to use the revenue it gets from the sale of water to pay for things that wasn't budgeted for, that doesn't have a revenue stream. And as a result of that, you see things like the payables to the TCTA falling behind, reduced budget for maintenance, reduced budget for the dam safety project, and rehabilitation of infrastructure. And that's what you really see when you win, because there's this focus on things that one is outside of their mandate and doesn't have a stream, an income stream or a revenue stream to pay for it. Where we are right now with the department is they've come to us and said that given all of these issues that we have now raised, the risk to the TCTA, you know, they're falling behind on maintenance and all of that, is there a way that the 1.9 billion that they had originally committed to reducing the overdraft by in 2018-19 is actually done in equal tranches over or reduced over a three-year period? And that's the negotiations that we're having with the department right now around all of this. It is quite difficult to, I mean, on the one hand, we want to instill some kind of fiscal discipline and commitment with the water trading entity in reducing the overdraft, but on the other hand, we also want to ensure that the efficacy of the assets that we're putting in the ground is maintained. And so what we have to consider around all of that is the ability to actually move all of the water services projects out. Consider the
as you move forward, overdraft with whom?
So this is the water trading overdraft that they have with the Paymaster General account, which is housed, I mean, in terms of the National Revenue Fund, that's housed in the Reserve Bank, but it's really the general account where all money is all where departments all draw their money down from. So we call this the primary banking account. It's a PMG account that is housed, that we have access to, but I mean, it's really housed with the Reserve Bank. So this is really, I mean, so if you want to think about this, this is really the water trading entity owes the National Revenue Fund 1.9 billion rand. And if we do all of that, you know, what are the consequences? How do we, so, I mean, we would want to increase these commitments around the payments to the TCTA, and then how do we start monitoring?
My apologies. I think that the presenter is going very detailed on the information, but it's not here. I'm not sure if what, because I feel that on this particular issue that we are interested on, you've gone quite detailed, but this information is not recorded. We don't have it in record. I'm not sure unless it's me who will say. I thought that all what you have said will be able to link it in the document here. I don't think it's not sure.
So, Honourable Chauke, you know, this is the, I think, the fourth time in 2 years that I have now presented this to the committee. So this is background information that I've had in previous presentations before, and assumed that because there was a whole bunch of the fifth in previous presentations that it's really giving an update, so it's highlighting a bunch of things, but really giving an update of where we are going forward.
If I do go ahead, okay. I shall explain. Just before we engage as to the proof for the National Treasury. Thank you.
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years. So one of the things that we have to consider in kind of renegotiating this commitment, and this is my last point I'm going to make about on this, is what does this mean for the payments that the water trading entity makes for the TCTA. So it was really a simple commitment around just reducing the amount, the overdraft, but now we have to, what's emerged are these other risks, and we now have to consider those risks in considering whether we allow them to do this. The other one that I didn't put down here is probably interest, because we are incurring interest on this. There's an opportunity cost of funds. What do we do around all of that? Because, and it's you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because if you charge with interest, it's immediately fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So it is a difficult thing, and we're trying to kind of strike that balance. So the last thing that I'm going to discuss, honourable members, is our responses to the budget review and recommendations report. Every year, the Minister of Finance writes to the Speaker with detailed responses from the National Treasury on the various portfolio committees' recommendations for the Minister of Finance and the National Treasury. I am not sure whether for this financial or for this year, whether that has been done, and I wasn't able to verify that. But notwithstanding all of that, here's a summary of what we had recommended. So in relation to differentiating between the funding alignment for MIG and RBIC, that we think about a different approach in dealing with these bulk projects. What we have done, and we acknowledge that not all municipalities can afford the co-funding around all of this, is we have set up a new co-funding committee between the Department of Cooperative Governance, the Department of Water and Sanitation, and the National Treasury, where we assess the financials of those municipalities and the ability to do all of this. And in some cases, the RBIC will then fund, will fully fund, or while we assess the ability for MIG to actually contribute in some cases, or for the municipality use its balance sheet to go to the market to fund the top-up, because what you really want the RBIC to do is to fund the social component around all of this. And by having this committee, you are able to, on a project-by-project basis, assess whether the municipality can co-fund or not. This would allow for a greater focus and a greater targeting of the subsidies that we have within the water sector. in relation to the recommendation around the review of infrastructure grants. So SALGA, the Department of Water and Sanitation, SALGA, National Treasury, DPME, and a whole bunch of central government administration departments has undertaken a local government infrastructure grant review. So in the case of water and sanitation, we would have the water, the Department of Water and Sanitation partners on all of this. And this review is ongoing, and what we have already done in relation to the grant structure is, you know, we've already kind of merged several grants. The next step in the grant review process is how do we deal with maintenance and how do we build capacity. So as you all know, the Constitution requires national governments to support and build the capacity of local government to execute its functions. So how do we strengthen the capacity within grant administration and implementation? And then lastly, how do we separate these roles for different spheres of government in the implementation of grant infrastructure projects. So the recommendation is supported, and we will continue working with the department on that. Probably the most controversial recommendation that we had received from this committee was around direct access to the equitable share in dealing with outstanding debt. You know, this is a constitutional provision. So it's a little difficult to kind of take money away from municipalities that the Constitution and the Division of Revenue Act is exactly there and to pay debt. But it is a continuous problem, and there are local, I mean, there are these kind of imbalances across all spheres of government. One of the things that my colleagues in our Intergovernmental Relations Division says is, yes, but municipalities can't pay water boards because national government departments are not paying municipalities there for their water services. And so it's those kind of imbalances that you see, or government is really bad at paying government. So how do you kind of structure all of these things? But we do continue to engage with the Department of Property Governance on how we deal with all of those things. And we have been using the provincial treasuries, specifically for the non-delegated municipalities, to ensure that municipalities are honoring their financial obligations. Then the last recommendation was really around these interventions and water services interventions. I think one of the difficulties around all of this is that there isn't a kind of set strategy or framework for the Department of Water and Sanitation to determine what an intervention is, how is this different to what is provided for in the disaster management framework and all of that. And one of the things that we've continued to advise the department to do is to develop that framework, because then it sets out roles and responsibilities quite clearly. It sets out consistency around what an intervention is. It clearly defines what that is and why this would sit outside other frameworks or disaster management frameworks, or like the Disaster Management Act, to deal with all of these things. In some cases, I mean, these emergency interventions are really just about a lack of maintenance, and how do you start dealing with those, the discipline around all of that. But by consistently having a set of principles on how you apply to deal with all of those things, it does provide greater certainty within the system on who does what, when, where, and how. And then lastly, we do have some flexibility within the budget to deal with all of those things, but that only works if you have a clear framework on what you need to do for who and when and how. So the Division of Revenue Act and the Public Finance Management Act both allow the department, in some cases with the approval of the National Treasury, and in some cases they don't even need that, to move money around in the budget. So there are some limitations around all of that, and there are rules on a process on how you follow, but nothing stops a national transferring officer from moving money from one municipality to another municipality, because the legislation provides for that. And that's where I end. Thank you.
Thanks. That is National Treasury and also Office of the Auditor General. Maybe just the background for us to get a sense of the submissions or the briefings that came from both of those. And the letter reads as follows, on behalf of the committee, we are inviting you to brief us on the following. The budget and expenditure matters related to 2017-2018 financial year and the extent to which the overspend will negatively impact on the budget for the year 2018-2019. The second expectation was the extent in which the department will have sufficient funds to finance its priorities for 2018-2019. Thirdly, the financial position of the department for 2017-2018 and the outer years. Fourthly, the financial position of the water trading entity for the 2017-2018 and the outer years. Fifthly, detailed explanation and sustainability of the overdraft and the extent to which the department is adhering to the agreement between itself and National Treasury. And the last expectation was the National Treasury's response to the budget review recommendation reports. Now, these are the expectations written to the Department of Finance, National Treasury, and also your AG's office. So accordingly, therefore, as we look into the budget going forward, that background shall assist us so as to be able to get a sense as to whether we are going or coming. Clearly, we have can we ask PMG, we tell them all the time that this is a meeting of Parliament. This is not a meeting of PMG. PMG has no right to register anyone here. PMG will take a register from the committee secretariat so that we have an understanding. We appreciate the role that you play. Your minutes are very prompt and very helpful, I must say. But equally, we would really appreciate if you respect our meeting, please. Maybe we need to write directly to PMG, Madia, so that this is understood. Otherwise, if you tell this one, you keep changing, I must say. Otherwise, you won't be able to keep up with all of you. So the one doesn't tell the other one who is expected to come. So that's what we have from both the AG and also the National Treasury. It's quite an alarming briefing, I must say. It puts you in a situation where you never get to know as to where you start and where you end. The extent in which the problems are within the department. And the question, I'm not even sure whether it is permissible on the part of National Treasury and AG, I must say, because the National Treasury does respond to a specific point about the accounting systems, to the fact that you don't have access to SEP precisely because of the systems that you are making use of. As to how is that affecting, clearly it is negatively affecting. Is that permissible? Is that allowed for any specific department or its entity to go different direction? Clearly, that is going to make your work difficult, let alone your work. For whatever reason, the department shall have entered into those. Whether they are right also or wrong is another question, because you are going to receive a report from CETA that says Department of Water and Sanitation, do not go ahead with your procurement of SEP, but the department will go ahead. That's a separate matter, of course. Now, this is quite fundamental, I must say. Another question I would imagine embedded in all what we have been receiving is whether this department is indeed a going concern. This question has been asked by the Auditor General, directed directly to the previous minister. As to how was that question responded to? Perhaps the National Auditor Auditor General's office might have to touch on this one. Members, that's the briefing from the two entities of government, so the Auditor General and also the National Treasury. I see your hand, Mr. Chauke, Mr. Basson, Mr. Mguni, Mam Kekana, Mam Kaula noted that order. Thanks.
Chair, I'm not going to ask questions now. I want to deal with a particular process so that maybe one will then be able to locate this discussion that we're having, this presentation that we're having this morning. Rest of the work that already is done by the committee in preparation for the budget from us now. One is that we've met in water board, they've made their presentation, strategic plan, we've met the department, strategic plan, budget. We are meeting you today. Maybe next week we'll be passing the budget. So the issues that we're dealing with today are issues that we're supposed to have dealt with before we meet with the department. So that what you raise, something that we empowered when we deal with the department. And they, at some point we invited, we're not available. Not putting a thing, but we invited for that reason. That the committee prepared itself when we interact on the budget of the department, this committee is empowered. So we're working backwards now, and the point that I want to throw to the chair, obviously, but the meeting will have to agree. The first point I want to ask you will be from the Auditor General, both of the Auditor General and Mr. Treasurer. Have you presented this finding to the minister, the new minister of the department? If so, when? If not, what are the implications? All right? I think by now the position of the committee is really understood where we are. National Treasurer, with the state of the department currently that all of us are now aware of, I don't pick up anywhere where, except the fact that on your recommendation, on the budgetary review recommendations report, it's not detailed that you said you will try to get information but do not get. You can only extract whatever that you put here. What does the, in fact, the responsibility of National Treasury, which is the constitutional mandate, in case the department collapses in front of you? There's no action. It's just normal. This is what they're doing, they're spending, and it becomes normal. Then the Committee of Parliament is the one that must come in and say, you know, this department, all of that, right? The Auditor General, the point that the chair is raising now, is that at some point you wrote the letter, but you're not firm. You said, tell us if we cannot declare you, what is that? It's a going concern. Then it ends there, right? Why you can't declare them a going concern? What stops you to do that? I'm looking at two things, Chair. 2.4.9 billion goes generally to administration in your budget, including, if you look at that and then include your water planning and information management, for example. That forms part of your management, you know. To administer a grant, the reality is that this money that the department, this financial year, is that transfer, those grants. You then have almost 2.5 billion of people waiting to transfer 8 billion of grants to the federal government. It's not happening. In reality. There are no projects. There are no programs. Nothing. That's the reality, I think, that people have to be very honest. That currently, what the department is waiting for is just to receive those grants and then take them and pay accrual. There's not going to be a transfer. Do you want to say to me that National Treasury does not see this thing? And I know that we're dealing with yourself maybe at some point at the level of Parliament. It's a question that you want to pose to the National Minister of Finance. You know, I know the layers for that. Or even the Director General of Finance. You may want to escalate this thing to that level. Because what is clear to you is that this department does not have money. The point that I'm trying to come back is that if you have raised this thing with the minister, even the current minister, what is the response? What's the management? There's nothing. No one is fired, no one is charged. It's just normal. So look, here, I'm throwing this thing, but not because I'm not frustrated. I'm very clear. I know my oversight, and this committee is not frustrated. We are clear. But the fact is that we want organs that have a responsibility to help us to resolve this problem. And there seems to be not, I know you still want your power, you still have the bill that must come into this AG's powers and close that. But here is the development collapsing in front of us. Why the noise must be at the level of committee? I know I'll put the bill again. Why are you not helping us to declare this thing a going concern? Whatever they call this thing is bankrupt. Why can't just tell it's a bankrupt department? Therefore, some kind of an intervention from this and treasure required by the constitution comes in. You know, I think that's what we're trying to, you know, find ourselves, and not to blame you, but to say that here is the situation. It's a national security. Wartime is a national security issue. It collapses in front of us, and it comes normal. Hey, it's one of those people, hey, it's collapsed, thank you very much. We'll be the game again. Come on. There's something wrong here. That's my comment here, but with some small questions of yours. We look at your going on the motor vehicle. But nonetheless, that's my concern here.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, what worries me for this financial year that we are in is that on the 2nd of May, Water Trading Entity informed this committee that they are not in a position to pay your 2 billion rand. Mm-hmm. Secondly, they need another 2.5 billion rand to pay PCTA, which they didn't pay them in the last financial year. So they are sitting with 4.5 billion rand that's unfunded in this financial year. Now, I cannot see that they can get out of this by utilizing the budget. And I want to add to what my colleague has said. It seems that the only intervention that you are looking at is if you don't adhere, we will stop your payments.
Mm.
That's not helping this department. We need other interventions, and you need to tell us what kind of interventions they are, and if there's nothing else you can do, then you must inform us about that, and then we must see how we deal with this matter. Because this department is, if you look where they started, and where they are now, and then I hesitate to think where they will be in the next financial year. Because the way it's been, the business of the day in that department is being dealt with. And you have mentioned it, but I get the sense that the water trading entity is paying for stuff that it should not pay for. Because there are, as it four areas, they need to pay TCTA, they need to pay the water research commission percentages. That's
that's where their money goes. And now we see that the money of the water trading entity is being transferred to the department, being used for the war on leaks, all the stuff that they should not do. Then they paid you the 748 million rand at the end of last year. Whilst they knew they are committed for 2.5 billion rand to TCTA. You are happy you received your money back, but what happened on the other side? Rob Peter to pay Paul, Paul is happy he received the money, but Peter must struggle, and eventually it becomes your problem. Because if TCTA cannot pay, the guarantees can be called up, you'll have to pay for it. So this thing is turning in a circle, and we're not stopping this, and we really need to know where we will stop it. And I believe that the buck stops with Treasury. Now, I can understand, and you must tell me whether I'm not correct. You only monitor money that you give to departments on your system, on your computer system. Like the water trading entity, they sell water, they get an income, it's not on your system, that's why they use SAP. Which is unfortunate, you cannot deal with it, but it's the same as water boards. They receive their money from either department. So you've allocated 15.5 billion rand for the financial year, and you're monitoring how they spend the 15.5 billion. Whatever happens in a water trading entity, it's something different. They must produce that information to you. Now, I understand why the water trading entity in the previous financial year, the income was 117%. Because for the first time in the previous financial year, they only budgeted for 90% of the invoices they sent out, and they did not include the outstanding amount. So now the money extra they get in, that's why they get a higher income. But Chairperson, there is a lot of questions, and I think we need to start with Treasury, and they must explain to us whether their hands are cut off, whether there's other mechanisms they can deal with this matter, or the ship is just being left to sink, and then we'll see what happens. Thank you, Chair.
Mr.
Mgula. Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, Mr. Chairman and colleagues. Morning.
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 Thank you very much.
Morning, morning, morning.
Chief. Thank you very much, Queen.
Chief.
Are you really in control of the fiscal of the country? The expenditure, the revenue, are you really in control?
We might be talking to the wrong people. They're not in control. How can the government get into more debt, more especially in this department, when you are there? I'm surprised you say government owing government, and the government failing to pay another government, but we're still in the same government, and we have what you, who you're supposed to monitor. What is your constitutional obligation? These things come through, don't you get these reports from the auditor? Because you say you said now yourself, we don't know how this thing is happening until we get the auditor's report. What's your job? Because before the auditor gives you the... You don't only give money, you don't give money to the department. You also monitor what you give. You monitor what you give. And what are you saying? When a department, while you are monitoring, there are double payments. And we're talking millions and billions here. You know, this department, they will tell you that they have the double payment of 600 million. Is it not a concern for you as treasurer? I'm wondering at home, when
the money has been given by the mandate to go and do closer. You don't ask receipt. No, it's fine. When the child is come back with the glossary, we don't even check what is there. If only everything is sweets and biscuits. What is it? And then treasury. The department is asking an extension. And you are coming to say to, after they have paid once, they are owing billions. They come to you and pay 1,748 million, and you say, oh, they have acceded to the commitment, and then now we're going to give them a hearing to see whether we can extend for 3 years. What's your recommendation? Let's hear your recommendation. But I have a problem with you. If you are really meaning to be tough, I would have expected you to tell us that we're going to be tough to them. Tell them they must pay this amount. And also ask them, where are they getting this money to pay? Because even now, the AXA has indicated that for paying the 748 to them, according as auditors, they failed to pay TCTA. To them, it's like they have not met the commitment. What are you saying? Based on these two comparisons. They failed to pay TCTA. They paid you the amount that they're supposed to be paid. But there's no movement. They're still standing there. There's no movement. They're still standing there. What are you saying? As the owners, we have put the money to you to control it for us. I understand. Yes, we indeed have to make sure that as a committee we monitor these people, we do our oversight. But it ends where we just pass the budget, finish, we don't even the figures, you have the figures, you have everything there, dealing with those things every time. I understand that you are not helping us. You are not helping us. Why are you quiet? Because these people submit to you as treasury, quarterly, if I'm not mistaken, they're submitting reports to you quarterly. Monthly. And there are months when they do not submit. In the AXA, they said that you are sometimes quiet when there are quarterly reports that are not submitted within 45 days. I have read it from the AXA, success report. If I'm wrong, I may be quoted, Chapel, but I have read from the AXA. There's a treasury, there are reports that are submitted within 45 days, and some of them, they are not submitted. What do you say as treasury, if that's not the case? Can the monitoring here in Hambajan? And when they have submitted, even if that's monthly, or daily, or weekly, fine. But how do you verify information? Do you have power to take this, to tell us the right answer, or you still have to ask your MM? I just want a yes or no answer through you, Jefferson. Do you have power to tell me now? That you have power to tell me what was I asking? Yeah. Let me go on. It will come again. You know, when you do talk, you become so, yeah, I'm angry because that I'm also paying tax there. When you have got these documents that are coming to you on weekly, monthly, or so, quarterly basis, do you verify the information that is given to you? Because you can't be saying, no, that you said you are beautiful. Who told you are beautiful? Who verified that you are beautiful? Because there should be a panel of judges that are saying, yes, that person is beautiful. Who verify that information? That information that has been given by the department this quarter, last quarter, or the previous quarter, no, was correct, so that you can track where is it missing. You are indicating that now when you are cutting the budget, you cut to some of the program, to ASIP and the like. You allow that to say no, for you to pay, you must cut this budget to ASIP and so forth. Why didn't you advise them in the first place when they were what?
they were programming, they were putting those targets. And because when you put a budget, I know it's going to work somewhere, it's going to assist somewhere. And now you say, no, cut here to repay. Why did you allow that? And do the other stakeholders, madam, other stakeholders know? Because when you try to help a department that, no, we cut here to meet the target, you are not alone. Many people are affected. Many people are affected. We've got the AXA that is affected. We've got the portfolio committee that is affected. Do you come to us and say, no, together with the department now, we've decided that we take this amount from ASIF or these targets, then we're not... So that way it becomes procedural. When the department comes here, we know exactly what is supposed to be happening. But Chairperson, let me stop there. It's fine. But for... AXA. I know you indicated that the department has withdrawn. It's trying to withdraw with no reason. I will suggest, I will also go with you, that if you can emphasize the issue of reasons for withdrawal, is it not that they were stopping you or disturbing you from making advances to monitor them now for the NSA, because we know how crooks are doing. Crooks will come with a stumbling block so that you are unable to catch him nearer. You will be concentrating on the past thing that he has done. So if that is the case, you must also be looking at that particular issue. And then this non-disclosure, you must also be looking, because you said the WTE never disclosed the deviation. I think it's on page 32. It never disclosed. Did you ever ask them what are the reasons? And did you, because you are saying that, is the Treasury aware that these people never disclosed some of the things of the funds that were used by them? And lastly, as I'm closing, did you ever make an audit on the revenue problems on the debt consultation? I think there's a debt collector in the department which was paid almost $600 million to do that collection. Did you do audit to check how did it, as because I understand the contract is expiring this year, Chairperson. Yeah, it has expired. The achievement of it and how much was it that it collected? If it did nothing, probably must get the money back. We must get the money back. If you do, if your performance was low, we've paid you $600 million, but you collected $50 million. We've wasted. In fact, we wanted to gain through you. Thank you.
Yes, dear boy. I'm taken.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Chair. Mine, because of my colleagues raised more questions, but I'm not going to dwell in that issue. The issue raised of Basson, Honorable Basson, on the issues of 542 million for only program not budgeted for. My question is that where did the funds for the war on this program come from? And when will the funds be allocated to expenditure currently in a suspenses account? Thanks, Chair.
Mam Kaula?
Ngibonge sihlalo. Nginibingelele nonke enikhona. Okokuqala nje engizothi ake ngibonge ngizobonga ama-auditor ba always wona ahlezi esihlukumeza la mina noma engihlukumeza ngokuthi alokhethi athole kukini. Mhlawumbe ngiyaqala ngiyagcina ukuzwa bekwazi ukukhuluma iqiniso. Ngiyabonga kunena ngizobeka eceleni. Nami sihlalo la ngibuyela ku lana ku church. Lana thina sikhombisa ngokusobala sihlalo ukuthi asinabo abantu abasigadele izimali zabakhokhi bentela la eSouth Africa. Nabazimisele ngokubona abantu bakithi bethola lento kuthiwa ingqalasizinda. Why ngikushiso lokho? Ngikubuzisa ukuthi yini eyenza ukuthi bakhiphe imali bangayilandeli ukuthi le mali le yenzeni ngasikhathi sini kuphi? Benze show ukuthi babonile lento ebicelelwe ukuthi yenziwe na. Okunye okungiphatha kambi kulo mnyango, mina ngokwami manje ngibona sengathi nabo funa sibafake masishaye ominister la kakhulukazilo okade khona before nama-official nabo laba sifuna sibashaye ngoba kubona kusho ukuthi ngamanye amazwi ufika abadedela imali bona abakwazi ukuyimonitha ukuthi le mali yenzeni ngasikhathi sini kuphi khona. And base bebuya futhi bezocela enye basho ukuthi okay siyabonga siyasiza isicelo senu kodwa kuqala sacela ukubona first ukuthi nenzeni ngale yamali. Umbuzo wami ukuthi kanti bona banabo na abantu abamonithayo aba ayikho ni into ebeveza ukuthi nayi le mali yabo. Na honorable umgoli ushinte lula yabo njengoba ngisebenza la eParliament ngiyahola njalo umhla ka 15 mangikhiphe imali nginikeza izingane funa ngazi ukuthi kuthengweni ngibone leyo nto ithengiwe. Ngamanye amazwi mina ngizosho kuhlalo sami ukuthi nayo lo mnyango ka-treasure sinenkinga nawo. Uwenza ukuthi lo msebenzi wethu ungakwazi ukusebenza ngendlela efanelekile. Okunye okungiphatha kambi uyabona masikhuluma laphansi ngomasipala khona la nikhuluma khona ngama on leads. Uyabona lezi mali ekhishwe lo 500 million mkhulu kabi and kuyimakhona labantwana okuthiwa ma-learnership akaholile. Edebhe ngingakutshela nje kuney'kalo ey'njalo ukuthi abaholile kuthiwa iy'mali azikho. Kodwa uma sithi iy'mali azikho noma kusho omunye wethu kuye kube sathi kulinywa into engekho. Sihlalo, into ebengiyoyicela lana bengicabanga mina ukuthi laba kufanele babuye bezositshela ukuthi ngalaba bantu abasebenzise izimali zabakhokhi bentela budedengu yiziphi izinyathelo ababathathele zona. Siyezwa ukuthi akhona amacala avuliweyo, siyezwa kuthiwa khona uphenyo, but sifuna ukubabona beboshwa laba bantu ngoba umphakathi phansi uyayidinga ingqalasizinda. And abantu bakithi abanawo amazwi and kuba nami niye nenze kanje sihlale le nto ingiphatha kambi moyeni ngifana nawe Mnguni. Ayikho into ebuhlungu ukuthi uhlale la njengoba sihleli la thina inhloso yethu sihlalele labantu abaphansi. Nina njengoba nila ngithi niyazi ningene ngokuthi ni-aplayile nizifundiswe thina sama-politician sifuna lezinto esiyitshela abantu impilo engcono kuwo wonke umuntu siyibona yenzeka. Uyabona le ndaba ukuthi nizodlala ngathi la nihambe nithathe ama-taxpayer abantu ezoxhashazwa kalula nibezosikhohlikhohlisa lana le nto yenza ukuthi ngijuluke. Yaba kuyimanje sifuna ukuthola ukuthi obani ababoshiwe even uminister lo obengaphambili yithi ngakho sithi thina kwalaba abantu abebesebenza naye uqobo lwaminister ukusidelela kwalokhu ukuthi babuye bambathathe labantu bazobafaka la bengakashushiswa batholakale bemsulwa imali zidliwe lana. Uyabona if sikhuluma ngo 848 million imali les o overdraft mina ngisola nina anana niwenza umsebenzi wenu ngesingisi niyafeyila ukwenza umsebenzi niyafeyila ukusenza thina siyile portfolio committee sibe kwazi ukuthi siqhubekele phambili. Akwazi ukuqhubekela phambili lana thina sizolosigidagide entweni eyodwa kanti ukufeyila kwenu kulimaza nathi kube sathi nasizamafeyila kanti inkingi lele kunina asinibone uma nisibuya nizositshela ukuthi obani ababoshiwe ngoba uma nisazosixoxela le nto yenu mina ngeke ngikhohlise angizwani nayo asizili kuzodlala lana thina thina sama-politician next year siyokhethweni siyophinda futhi ndifuna sishawo abantu kusho ukuthi niyajabula nina ma nibona la matoyitoyi eniwabona emgwaqweni because nihleli lana nina kumakhompyutha endlini anilwazi usizi thina esikuthweleyo uya lale host abantu banenkinga banawo amanzi kodwa lazi imali zikhona ziyaphuma and le ndawo ka-government to government othola ukuthi wodwana ubambana inkuzi wazothi nibambana nonke inkuzi nolwaya kwi-department naye ibamba ngapha nala ibamba ngapha mina nginina ngithembe muntu kunina bambani into yinuka amakhwapha
The officials in parliament have gone on a go slow. I've just read also a letter from one of the, I don't know who, managers or something like that, who indicates that there is no availability of translators due to the APC's extended public committee meetings that are due to take place. I take it that South Africans we did all here 24 years down in our democracy, what Mama Kaula was saying. Yes, it is our responsibilities, all of us, to learn and understand all the languages. And again, here very soon, some of us are going to speak Hebrew. In a nutshell, what Mama Kaula is saying, National Treasury has a responsibility of monitoring an appropriated budget. The one leaks issue remains a big problem. As politicians, what brings us together is that of having to bring a better life for our people out there. Nothing else. Mama Kaula is very pointed. She is saying, you are failing us. You are failing the people of South Africa, National Treasury, by not monitoring the budget. Last point that she's raising is that transgressors must be arrested. Those that break the law must be arrested. Those that mismanage the funds, the public funds, must be arrested. That's what Mama Kaula is saying in a nutshell.
Thank you, Chairperson. My comment around the presentation, Chairperson, is with regards to the confirmation by Treasury that this challenge of the department has been going on in their own faces. They've been seeing this happening continuously. They have assisted the department, not taking into consideration that the practice by the ministry at the time was not at the heart of assisting in service delivery. So the question Chairperson was around the fact that obviously that the Treasury was aware what was happening in the department. Couldn't be any avenue that should have been taken in this regard of saying the department be put under administration so as to avoid the continuous working on overdraft by the department. So this is what I just wanted just to add on what has been just presented to the committee chairperson. Thank you.
Chairperson, there is one question I did not just listen. Please just listen.
you have what was that overdraft that was given to the department, a legal fee to you? I wanted to know, was it legal them to give the department the overdraft?
Where is the advocate chambers? Okay, can you call him, Sharon? Maybe whilst Advocate Jenkins is, I wanted him to comment on a few areas as part of our responsibility. But whilst he's coming through on our constitution here, this is now section 216 that talks about treasury control. There's two subsections there. Subsection 1 talks about the national legislation that must establish a national treasury and prescribe measures to ensure both transparency and expenditure control in each sphere of government by introducing the following. A. Generally recognized accounting practice. B. Uniform expenditure classifications. C, uniform treasury norms and standards. And subsection 2, which is the most important. National treasury must enforce compliance with the measures established in terms of subsection 1, the one just read above, and may stop the transfer of funds to an organ of state if that organ of state commits serious or persistent material breach of those measures. Now we want to, you know, it feels like reading a Bible here now. We want to really go to the root of the problem, to a point where we are now to provide solutions going forward. The fundamental question that we want to ask here, AG and National Treasury, is that we have gone this far. We have a budget. The department is in this situation that it is today. Question that must arise is, when you are going to have this budget going forward, who is going to implement this budget? It cannot be those that have put us to where we are today. That's where I'm coming from. Advocate Jensen, you want to comment on that? Because Tebukulu was raising, just before that, Advocate Jensen, was raising a matter related to Section 100 of our Constitution, effectively. Putting the department under administration. That's what you're saying, sir. Having gotten through that section within the Constitution, it only makes reference to provinces. Mm-hmm. In other words, national, putting provincial and local under administration. So for a national department, there is this one provision, and perhaps Advocate Jenkins might wish to assist us on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's correct, as you indicate, Section 100 is for provinces. But if we, I thought, first of all, Chairperson, both presentations from the Auditor General's office as well as National Treasury, I thought was very useful. Mm-hmm. And I think for my purposes and for what the committee wants to do, I need to study the background and the details, as Honourable Chalk also talked about the sort of narrative connected to those figures. What I did get from it is that there are some critical areas, one being cash management. Now, when we then look at what can be done going forward, to manage these funds. My view is we do look at National Treasury for that. The reason I'm for that is that when we look at sections in the Constitution that deals with sort of intervention and management of funds, or creating mechanisms to ensure that there's transparency and accountability, and that there's value for money. We see in the Public Finance Management Act that deals with National Treasury's responsibilities, specifically Section 6, Subsection 2, Paragraph F, then categorizes Section 100 and Section 216, Subsection 2, together. And that's the two sections we've now discussed here. Section 100 for provincial intervention, Section 216, stopping of funds to any department, but national department included. So they throw them together, and it's a preemptive. It's mandatory. It must intervene by taking appropriate steps. So the National Treasury must prescribe, which they've done, prescribes norms and standards for the Treasury functions, including in this, is they must deal with cash management. They don't have it's not a discretionary area. And when those functions are not performed according to that regulatory framework that they've prescribed, then they must intervene. So, and then for Parliament to deal with that is a twofold exercise. One is to look at the implementation of legislation, would be Appropriation Bill, Appropriation Act, Division of Revenue Act, to say that the department is not complying with its functions. The department is not doing proper financial management, looking at the Public Finance Management Act. Then when we look at the Public Finance Management Act, we have to bring in both the Auditor General and National Treasury to say, what are you doing? You're also obligated in terms of your Public Audit Act for the AG, and in terms of the Public Finance Management Act and the Constitution, the National Treasury, to then to ask, what are you doing? Now, this is just sort of the on the paper regulatory framework, monitoring. Mentioned Section 31 that deals with monitoring of monthly statements. Now, how did it happen that the department is where it is if there was monthly financial statements submitted and that had to be monitored? As I say, that's the paper-based exercise. What really happens is where were funds moved around to create this impression that everything was fine until it burst? The same thing happened in the private sector with Steinhoff. We don't have to go into that now, but those are the issues that this committee can then start scratching open. But certainly part of that is to ask National Treasury, what did you do? And clearly it wasn't successful, if I may just put that out there, not as a fact, but as an opinion of mine. It wasn't successful. Why was it not successful? Why did it happen that when the Act was written to prevent this from happening, why is the department in the mess? Is there a problem with the monitoring system? Is there amendments needed to the legislation? Or was there some kind of deliberate attempt to create an impression that things were fine, but it wasn't fine? We're never going to get rid of that. That is, in the short term, called corruption, mismanagement. And that's also the task of the committee to then highlight and then to refer it to the appropriate committee, appropriate to law enforcement structures, which you spoke about yesterday. Thank you, Chair.
I was just consulting with Madia. Clearly, the issues raised here, the department has to talk to. The department has to come back together with National Treasury and also the Office of the General. Otherwise, we shall be talking to ourselves. I'm worried if we were to pursue our discussion beyond this stage without the department being here and responding to a number of these questions. Now, we are passing a budget here, and the department has to be part of this whole process, of this exercise. And also, we want, I think we are getting closer to finding some solution to the problems that the department is confronted with. That today we have all these opinions from the legal point of view, consulting with our constitution and establishing from National Treasury we need to get to a point where we really get to understand and be briefed as to what really went wrong. If there were any political interferences, we must be told in no uncertain terms that go ahead and do all the wrong things. We shall protect you. Now it's a very important exercise that we are in towards a budget vote debate. The last 2 years have come before us, frankly speaking, we were quite soft, I must say, thinking that things will come right. National Treasury has to tell us exactly what happened. The Office of the Auditor General has been able to come before us and they told us that there is interference. The reports have been contested. The minister before did take that meeting with the Office of the Auditor General. At least we got a sense. We're quite vocal on that one, that there can be no one who can contest the Constitution, as that Office of the Auditor General is a section, the Chapter 9, sorry, Constitution. You are contesting the credibility of that Constitution, as you are contesting the outcome of those. Granted, some of us do say, you know, you can take whatever a view on the reports by the Auditor General's office. But the insistence, to the point where he had to go for an appeal, should tell us something else. That's where we are. We really have to go to the root of the problem. We are at work here. We are not friends. We are not family. We are doing our work, all in the interest of protecting public funds. At the end, and making sure that our people out there get the best of what it takes out of their own taxes, especially those that are impoverished, especially those that are disadvantaged, unlike you and me. So that's where we are. Mr. Chok?
I'm sorry that you're not finished, but in fact, I'm just going to have what you're just saying, Chair. That the point that you're making, Chair, is a point that earlier when I was speaking, about how this process must be regarded. I think I agree with you, Chair, that what we must do will be to reconvene the meeting with the department. But in that meeting with the department, Chair, we must have the minister, the full component of the department, meaning that the high echelon, the minister, the deputy, and the CPC. It's very important, Chair, that we have all of them. We have the water trading entity to be part of that mission here. I'm not sure with regard to the water board here, but this is what we all fall under the CCTA to be part of that mission. I'm not sure if the water board here will guide on that path, that again, with their status, as we all know, that some of them have lapsed and there's no action that has been taken in the court for pronouncement. They are continuing in fact and mismanaging the process. For example, chair, which will have to deal with CDBN that has gone into an appointment of the company for 600 million without following the necessary is something that has been supported. So I want to agree with you, chair. But what must happen is that National Treasurer, let us invite the Director General of National Treasury, chair. With respect, I know that they allocated the official meeting with us, and she says that for the last 4 years I've been presenting this thing, which is good, which we appreciate that. Let us get the head of finance. If we cannot get both the Minister of Finance and the DG, but I'm saying that we may have to invite even the Minister, because the Minister is not for Minister, the Minister equal to other Ministers. And generally he has the same interest as we have as a committee here. We may want to invite the Minister of Finance, Chair, but the decisions that we are going to take after that meeting, Chair, have a serious implication on moving forward with the department. So I want to agree with you, Chair, that we do that particular exercise. On the finances, they go back. Both the AG, you are not coming clear of what is your view on the status of that department. We want you, as you come back, tell us exactly what is your view. For me, what is important, Chair, is that with the loan again, please demonstrate the legal requirement that allowed finance to approve the 2 billion overdraft. So they must be compliant with the law. Has the department complied in asking that? Have you verified that? Is the law followed to the last when you do that approval of the 2.2? It's part of what we must get. But I want to insist, Chair, that let's invite the Minister of Finance, let's invite the Minister of Water and Sanitation and that higher issue. So I will deal with this matter once and for all, Chair, and just find the solution. Thank you very much.
Mr. Bosa?
I fully agree. I would then request, Chairperson, that the presentation that was made to us on the 2nd of May be given to National Treasury. Because, Chairperson, if you look at this, both the budget of DWS as well as the water trading entity, which concerns me, and you should speak yourself, you should speak out on savings on Arbic. So they've got a shortfall of 1.5 billion according to them, excluding, the minister told us, the water boards. The department still cannot tell us how much money they owe the water boards. So even the minister said, we'll have maybe later in the year come back and revise because the department cannot tell them or tell him how much money they owe the water boards. But what we know, and I want to put that in aanhalingstekens, that what they say is 1.5 billion, we are not sure whether it is 1.5 or not 2 billion rand. I'm talking about the department itself. And then it's going to use savings on goods and services and on Arbic to finance the shortfall. And my question is, are they allowed to use Arbic funds to pay for shortfalls? You need to come up with answers on that. And then, if you look at the water trading entity, they've not budgeted in their budget, they have not budgeted for the 2.5 billion they haven't paid the water TCDA, and they have not budgeted to pay back on the overdraft. What they say in the document is, if there is a surplus, they could pay the surplus, or they can reduce the overdraft on the surplus. It's not budgeted for. If we've got a surplus, we'll pay you. And I had a discussion with the department on this. How do you go to National Treasury without any plan, any budget plan, telling them how you're going to pay them? You're going to tell them, well, you know, maybe I'll have a surplus, and if I have a surplus, then I'll pay you. So you need to get this document and scrutinize it, because it's like my colleagues have said, we've got to put this in the bed now. And if it means that you've got to stop funding and people can't pay salaries, and maybe then we'll get people to get really serious on resolving the problems in this department. Chair, and then lastly, I just want to, just one thing which I picked up, there's a lot of questions, but I won't ask it now, but I just want them to go and recalculate and look at the amount they've mentioned here on the Clem William Dam. I don't get it now, but I think it was 9.2 billion that was paid, or 9.5 million. Jefferson, just to give you a sense, in a written question that I asked in that was responded on the 17th of March last year, the construction unit officials or workers stopped work in 2016, October 2016. 53 workers, they are paid 2.5 million per month. They're still on site, there's no work. That gives me a calculation of 45 million rand that's paid on that project, and which is wasteful expenditure. Maybe you should just double check on it. The reply on my question was 17 March 2017. If you need more information on that, I can give it after the meeting. I can give that to you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I was just consulting. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Oh, thank you, Chair. To the Treasury and the Auditor General, water tariffs and water pricing will become a more contested issue in South Africa. Has the Office of the Auditor General, maybe National Treasury, undertaken any interrogation or investigation of the efficacy of our water tariff structure moving forward? Thank you.
Okay, let us agree that all the questions that have been raised are noted, and that we are not going to be responding to them today.
Yeah.
That, number two, we are calling on the Department of Water and Sanitation together with TCTA, its minister, the deputy minister, and also your national treasury finance minister and the DG to come before us. And continue with our work from where we started on the 2nd of May. Today's session going forward. It's quite a serious issue that we're dealing with. You're dealing here with 15.6 billion rand budget. It's no change of anyone. We're dealing here with a matter that talks to a department, the minister uses the words, that is in a mess. Clearly, you have officials that have put us to where we are. Whether or not we shall still be able to continue with this budget with the same officials that put us to where we are, that's the fundamental question that we are dealing with. Hence, all these consultations we're doing. Looking at the constitution, getting legal opinion, because we want to protect that money. That's the main issue that we want to do. We want to protect the public purse. It cannot be business as usual for the officials. We all know what they say about us all the time. We found them here, we're going to leave them here. for them it's business as usual. That's an irresponsible thought that goes through their mind and act. So for them it's not about all what we are about here. It's about something else. Now that's another issue perhaps you might wish to think about as you move forward, especially your national treasury and also your AG's office. We've asked this question a few times from the department. We've never received any response. We've just been listening to some of you now. The restraint of trade policy. We were talking to, when a meeting yesterday with SCOPA, and this question arose where we're told that there is no policy in government. Yes, at local government, yes, you do have such. You were just telling us just now, this one official today is working in this department, pursuing a certain responsibility, moves out, you call them approved professional person. The following day or following week, the person is back in the department as a consultant now. No cooling off period whatsoever. And for that person, he smiles going to the bank. It's a wrong practice. It must stop. So that's what members are saying in a nutshell. All those issues, you know, service providers charging departments double, if not more, warnings in those quarterly reviews and status record of review by national by AG's office. The department has dismally been failing to collect 11.2 billion rand. I guess the question there that shall arise is what options does the department have? When Mr. Mgoni was raising an issue about the debt collector having netted no less than 600 million or no more than 600 million, something to that effect. One other interesting point for me about this department, the problems started 2014, 2015. That shall say a lot about the leadership of this department that came in at that point. That shall say a lot. You are spot on when you are saying National Treasury. There is no home for war and leaks in the department. Finds itself somewhere. Yes, it's there in the... I don't know how it works. It's the first time actually I hear that you can have a program or a sub-program in your APP but not having to be budgeted for. I cannot comprehend with that one. I must still be convinced by somebody as to how it works. Because at the end, as we speak now, I met with some other fellow in Johannesburg last week who was telling me that he has been assigned to train, you know, for 5,000. As he was doing calculations for himself, he's from Durban, he was literally calculating over for a three-year period 1.2 billion rand. And then I was like at the back of my mind, where would that come from? It was not budgeted for. This SEP and bus story, it's quite a serious story, I must say. I mean, the fact that you cannot access their records because they're using a different or a separate system. is that legally allowed? Yeah, you have said something about ACIP as being a slush fund. It's a small grant fund for these municipalities. But that small can be, with its multiplier effect, it can be quite a big sum of an amount. I mean, you can imagine over years, you know, somebody benefiting out of that little, you know, grant funding. People will not be able to recognize, will not be able to pick it up, unlike these other big grants, like your RBIC and them. That one is quite a small but significant over a period of time. Those are some of the issues. I take it that we are agreed on in principle that we are not entertaining, but what we are doing, we are simply adding for homework when we come back next week. Madia was saying we might have to meet in the morning of Wednesday next week, and then be expected to adopt our report over lunch, that is now next week. Because week after next is going to be the budget. That's what I was trying to peddle with. Because it's also EPCs, so meeting in the afternoon might just prove not to be possible. Okay.
No. Chair, I think you've closed the issue. I really did not want to say it. But just maybe to add that, you know, we know that I'm talking to myself. Yeah,
sorry.
That's why, no, you can
have
back
for
I'm telling everything again. I'm making my point, okay? No. But the point that I want to put, colleagues, is that we know for a fact that the Special Investigating Unit. Well, look, the point I was making is that the national, what is that thing? SIU, we have met with them twice, I think, on the matters that limit. And the point that they raised with us was that with all the cases that they've recommended to the National Prosecuting Authority, there's no action that has happened so far. And I'm saying that in this meeting, maybe we may want to resolve that we invite both the SIU and the National Prosecuting Authority. Is that the whole from which was NPA? Because you see, this is a background of what the committee is going to. The committee will be embarking on this inquiry that we've already agreed upon. Some of the issues that are straightforward that will require to refer them directly to the law enforcement to take action against certain, you know, individuals and programs that we believe strongly, as identified both by the Auditor General and the National Treasury. We may want to refer them as a goal, so as to ease the work of the inquiry, vis-a-vis the time that we have to deal with the inquiry. We don't have much time, because very soon we'll be going to research on elections and it's an election year. So we have to package issues that require the attention of the law enforcement agents at the court, right? So that we deal with that and then deal with the rest of the issues. So that's the proposal that I'm making. MDF were to note it, we'll share it again with the chairman. It is important so that our meeting is not just a meeting to discuss, but it's a meeting that takes action.
we know for a fact that a number of these officials in the department were suspended, but they were never charged, right, with serious transgressions, and they came back and business as usual, right? We have to take it upon ourselves. We passed the budget as a committee of parliament. This is our budget, by the way. We have a responsibility to monitor the expenditure of this budget, supported by the AG and National Treasury in identifying mismanagement of our budget and alerting us. It's the exercise that you are doing. You are alerting us. It's up to Parliament, because we know the powers of the AGs are limited. It's only now that it's calling for more powers. But Treasury has a responsibility and a constitutional responsibility that they will have to take action against the department that is misappropriating a public fund. The department met only 28% of its target in the last financial year, but more than 16 billion rand was finished. 16 billion, right? Most miracle, 16 billion. We can change that for Zulu Natalia, or everybody will have a big house and a business bank and a swimming pool. Exactly. That's the issue that we are dealing with. In Port Mariko, the village next to where I come from, people drink water that is taken directly from the sewage system. They put chlorine on it and then they send it back to the community. In Port Mariko, I was there on Sunday. In Swatragem, people did not have water share for a long period of time, till today. Hence the money and the officials that live very luxurious lifestyle. Very luxurious lifestyle. If we had to do life audit on these officials, you'll be surprised what these officials, they come here wearing 20,000 rand shoes. That's what they do, yes. We know the kind of stuff that they come wearing. High level as they appear before this community. When our people on the ground do not have water. Right. So Chair, I was saying that we'll discuss one of the inputs that I've made, that maybe part of this engagement would be to expand the invitation and invite the National Prosecuting Service, whom we know very well that the SIU has referred cases to them. They've not done anything. But we can discuss that part, Chair. We may not conclude it, but it's an area that I believe strongly that we may have to do that. But all in all is that, Chair, let's have that meeting, let's have the department and the National Minister of Finance and really deal with this thing and do it. The concern that we have raised, Chair, we share it with you as members of this committee, that it cannot be business as usual. 16 billion rand of the public money that goes into people who are not even going to spend it properly. It's a serious concern. So we agree with you, Chair.
Mr.
Basan, could I request that you ask the department to give us a full report on the war on leaks. We are spending billions on war on leaks, but we don't know how much money we've saved on the work that's been done by the people that's been trained. Yeah, we need to know how many people have been trained and what is the success of war on leaks. See, that's the other side of the coin. Is this just flogging out money and nothing happens with it? We are not seeing any change in the loss of water in the country. They need to tell us. So please, Jay, if you may assist and ask the department next week, because this is also vital for us, for our investigation, and as well as whether they should go ahead. Because in this year's budget, 1.2 billion for war on leaks. That's what's been budgeted. Now, why do we throw money into a project that we've got? Nobody tells us. There's no report to the portfolio committee or to anybody on the success of this. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Mam Kavla, I think you are being, okay. Yeah, the last one.
Yeah, Bangasar. Namje sengisika ejikayo. Bengithi sisabahlekile. sisaba hlaba nje umnyango ka trench nalo muntu lo okuyena yena okwazi ukuthi asayinele imali ebekazi njengalapha nje e King William Dam le Ademecon Town lwa 9.5 million la utholakala khona ukuthi ayikho futhi i-contract ekhona esayitini esebenza kodwa iyakwazi uthola njalo lo 2 million. Kuyafunakala abe khona babuye basitshele ukuthi ubani lo okuyenana nalo muntu lokuyena yena ofike lakwazi ukuthi lakulale ukuthi imali iyosebenza lapha ayidivete ayibuyise ayoyikhomba kwenye indawo. Funa abuye sazi ubani nabo bajeze ukwenzelani ukuthi kusasa singabi nalezi zinkinga esizothola sinazo. And ngiyakubonga sesihlalo mauthi lezi nkinga wathi ziqala kakhulu ngo-2014 to 2015 lo mnyango ugcine usubonakala ukuthi udlala labantu kungabibiko noma futhi uyena uminister longasasekho naye mina ngokwami bengingajabula abuye ezo-accounta bese ngize naku-SIU sihlalo. I-SIU kunama-case la engangwa-reporter sihleli kanje. Ngifonela last of last week bengitshela ukuthi baba lo beyena bewumpeni i-investigator itoldaweva. Ngaze ngathi kulowo ngizocela ukuthi uma efuna ukubona ubufakazi baloo nto akangithathe senze usuku sizohamba abone ngisho yonke lento engikhuluma amaphayipha adantshiwe yonke lento engisuke ngikhuluma ngazo la ngoba ngeke ngisuke ngizohlala la ngizokhuluma into engekho. Yingakho-ke sihlala ukuthi thina sisenkingeni lana le mnyango ka-government esinayo la ayisizi ngalutho ungathi sisebenza ngokufevana ukuthi bayaprotectani ukuthi okubani omunye angaveli. Sicela ngabe uminister ngabubani azovela lo muntu okuyena yena ngoba ngeke uthi uzothi ubamba laba baphambili ungakwazi ukubona ongemuvi ukuthi ubani okuyena lo bhizi osayinayo. Basihamba nawe sihlalo sihamba sibona senza ama-oversight sibona iy'nkinga koLimpompo akukho lesihambakhona sihambile sawufika ngisho lana la koMpumalanga akukho ama-province engahambanga khona kodwa uthothi la mabepresenta basho into ezi-right imali isebenzile. Lowu yena yena okwazi ukusayina asayinele into engayibonanga ukuthi nansi yenzekile. Sicela lo muntu naye simazi mani buya nibe nisitshela ngoba angikhumbuli ungakhipha imali wena ukhiphela umuntu ungabonanga ubani osayinile le nto to make sure ukuthi ukubonile le nto yenzekile. Ma ku-injiniya naye ukuthi sifuna lo phasise lo msebenzi eze la simbone. Ngiyabonga bashajwe.
Umam Kaula is making reference to the expenditures at King William Dam, continued expenditures, accounting of such must be brought here. This is a point raised equally by Mr. Pasron, and the figures he was briefing us about different to what we have in the submission. Kaula also talks about cases that he had reported to the SIU, though SIU is of the view that those cases are not do not exist. However, she is quite adamant and very strong that those, she, to a point where she can even get anyone, including the SIU, to go and see the pipes that are lying out there, which are a waste. The last point she's talking about, she talks to our oversight work that we do, and money is being spent wrongly in some instances, to a point where those that sign are not necessarily the ones who are agitating for wrongdoings, but those that are behind must be found and be taken to where they belong, that is prison. I think this is an additional point raised by all of us, that that must also at the end talk to compiling some responses on your side, so that when you come back together, we meet next week with those respective individuals mentioned, from National Treasury, Minister and Deputy and DG, also the Department of Water and Sanitation. Those are some of the issues raised in this meeting, and I think we are done. And I wish to thank National Treasury, thank also Office of the General for the sterling work that you continue to do. We wish that you could be doing more. That's the message that comes out of this meeting. Especially National Treasury. And then ours again is just a continuation of what we are employed to do, what we do best, oversight. No friendship, no family, but just work. I think we are done until we meet next week, and all the best with those that are debating. Any one of us is debating today? No. Ours is on the 22nd. Yeah, 10 in the morning, I'm told. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.